to help the journalists with their spin. I was going to say something inappropriate. We'll be right back with the debate, commercial-free, Air America Radio Majority Report.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
We're back. More Strangler, Sam. See, that's what we need.
Well, that's what you ask, and you
that's what we get.
I have to shift my position around here so that I can watch the debate.
Are we going
to
watch Law and Order?
I forgot to put the TiVo on.
Oh. So what are we going to watch?
We're going to watch the debate.
Your mic's not on, Sam.
I understand. That's what I just said. I have to get up.
Well, we're going to watch the... Sam wants to watch the debate. I wanted to watch Law and Order because I love Vince D'Onofrio. I do. He's a tall drink of water, and he's a fantastic actor, and he's consistently great in everything. But be that as
it
may...
And just a nice guy.
And just an all-around good guy. And the thing is, we got to watch the debates. And, you know, Jacques Derrida, who passed, as it turns out, it wasn't pancreatic cancer. He said, if I have to hear George W. Bush speak one more time, I'll just die. And look what happened.
Well, that's...
We lost Jacques Derrida, a great postmodernist.
Now, we haven't talked, a minute or two before the debate starts. We haven't talked at all about Iraq today because, of course, this is a domestic debate. But we lost five or six soldiers. Was it six soldiers today?
Six.
And,
How many civilians? We don't know.
We don't know. I mean, we won't know until afterwards. But, you know, we heard that thing from Cy Hirsch the other night about just U.S. soldiers who are, they're killing... You know, there's a lot of soldiers over there who they go crazy in that situation. You can't train people to be killers and then expect them to flick a switch and not be killers anymore. That's just one of the realities of the of war. And George Bush, who has been living in a fantasy world, which I think only in the first debate was he sort of shook out of it and why he fell apart.
Or it's not a fantasy world, Sam. It's a I don't care world. And also, you guys, a plug for Seymour Hersh's book. Chain of Command, The Road from 9/11 to Abu Ghraib, available on HarperCollins. It is a must-read, and it'll really tell you more than you ever wanted to know about Don Rumsfeld.
Now, I want to remind everybody that if you're at home and if you are of age, if you are of legal drinking age, you can participate in our liberally drinking game, the drinking liberal game. Every time George Bush calls John Kerry a liberal... You will hear that noise during the debate. That will be the only interruptions of this debate, unless, of course, George Bush actually has a nervous breakdown.
And also, since Bob Schieffer, we can also incorporate Hi Bob into this drinking game from the old Bob Newhart show.
Yes, short of George Bush having a complete nervous breakdown, and we will, in which case, we will break in to laugh hysterically.
Get in here with that pizza, Carmen.
But for the liberal. Now, it's going to be domestic issues. You will hear George Bush call John Kerry a liberal. You'll say he's going to take all your money. He's going to start with rich people's taxes and then go down the line. Well, of course, that's not the case.
But you know what, Sam, they may discuss is the ownership society, which is what?
It just means
that the burdens of government and the risks of corporations are shifted to who?
To the average person, the citizen.
That's absolutely right. That's the ownership society.
When he talks about the ownership society, remember that two-thirds of all Americans do not save enough money to take advantage of putting their money into tax-free investments, to get dividend income. We're about to start, well, you know, we don't need to hear the directions. We all know what it is. I mean, they're saying this for George Bush because he couldn't figure it out last time. He kept running out of things to say before the light went off.
What about the box on his back?
Now, I don't know if they're saying... You know what they're not saying, and I don't know, maybe this has something to do with it. They are not specifically saying you're not allowed to wear a device that allows Karl Rove to tell you what the answers to the debate are. And maybe there's a reason why they're not saying that. That's all I'm suggesting.
Maybe it's part of the memoranda of understanding.
All right, George Bush is walking out.
There he is, the man who killed Jacques Derrida, George W. Bush.
Kerry is significantly taller than George Bush. That's not terribly relevant.
Where are the crosses on Bush's podium?
All right, we now take you to the debate live in progress. And remember, we will hit the buzzer when he says liberal.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. By coin toss, the first question goes to Senator Kerry. Senator, I want to set the stage for this discussion by asking the question that I think hangs over all of our politics today and is probably on the minds of many people watching this debate tonight, and that is, will our children and grandchildren ever live in a world as safe and secure as the world in which we grew up?
Well, first of all, Bob, thank you for moderating tonight. Thank you, Arizona State, for welcoming us. And thank you to the Presidential Commission for undertaking this enormous task. We're proud to be here, Mr. President. I'm glad to be here with you again to share similarities and differences with the American people. Will we ever be safe and secure again? Yes, we absolutely must be. That's the goal. Now, how do we achieve it is the most critical component of it. I believe that this president, regrettably, rushed us into a war, made decisions about foreign policy, pushed alliances away, and as a result, America is now bearing this extraordinary burden where we are not as safe as we ought to be. The measurement is not are we safer. The measurement is are we as safe as we ought to be. And there are a host of options that this president had available to him, like making sure that at all our ports in America, containers are inspected. Only 95% of them, 95% come in today uninspected. That's not good enough. People who fly on airplanes today, the cargo hold is not x-rayed, but the baggage is. That's not good enough. Firehouses don't have enough firefighters in them. Police officers are being cut from the streets of America because the president decided to cut the cops program. So we can do a better job of homeland security. I can do a better job of waging a smarter, more effective war on terror and guarantee that we go after the terrorists. I will hunt them down and we'll kill them. We'll capture them. We'll do whatever necessary to be safe. But I pledge this to you, America. I will do it in the way that Franklin Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan and John Kennedy and others did, where we build the strongest alliances, where the world joins together, where we have the best intelligence, and where we are able ultimately to be more safe and secure.
Mr. President, you have 90 seconds.
Bob, thank you very much. I want to thank Arizona State as well. Yes, we can be safe and secure if we stay on the offense against the terrorists and if we spread freedom and liberty around the world. I have got a comprehensive strategy to not only chase down al-Qaeda wherever it exists, and we're making progress. Three-quarters of al-Qaeda leaders have been brought to justice. But to make sure that countries who harbor terrorists are held to account, and as a result of securing ourselves and ridding the Taliban out of Afghanistan, the Afghan people had elections this weekend. And the first voter was a 19-year-old woman. Think about that. Freedom is on the march. We held to account a terrorist regime in Saddam Hussein. In other words, in order to make sure we're secure, there must be a comprehensive plan. My opponent just this weekend talked about how terrorism could be reduced to a nuisance, comparing it to prostitution, illegal gambling. I think that attitude and that point of view is dangerous. I don't think you can secure America for the long run if you don't have a comprehensive view as to how to defeat these people. At home, we'll do everything we can to protect the homeland. I signed the Homeland Security Bill to better align our assets and resources. My opponent voted against it. We're doing everything we can to protect our borders and ports. But absolutely, we can be secure in the long run. It just takes good, strong leadership.
Anything to add, Senator Kerry?
Yes. When the president had an opportunity to capture or kill Osama bin Laden, he took his focus off of him, outsourced the job to Afghan warlords, and Osama bin Laden escaped. 6 months after he said Osama bin Laden must be caught dead or alive, this president was asked, where's Osama bin Laden? He said, I don't know. I don't really think about him very much. I'm not that concerned. We need a president who stays deadly focused on the real war on terror.
Mr. President.
I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. That's kind of one of those exaggerations. Of course we're worried about Osama bin Laden. We're on the hunt after Osama bin Laden. We're using every asset at our disposal to get Osama bin Laden. My opponent said this war is a matter of intelligence and law enforcement. No, this war is a matter of using every asset at our disposal to keep the American people protected.
New question, Mr. President, to you.
We're talking about protecting ourselves from the unexpected, but the flu season is suddenly upon us. Flu kills thousands of people every year. Suddenly, we find ourselves with a severe shortage of flu vaccine. How did that happen?
Bob, we were reliant upon a company out of England to provide about half of the flu vaccines for the United States citizen, and it turned out that the vaccine they were producing was contaminated. And so we took the right action and didn't allow contaminated medicine into our country. We're working with Canada to hopefully that they'll produce a help us realize the vaccine necessary to make sure our citizens have got flu vaccinations during this upcoming season. My call to our fellow Americans is if you're healthy, if you're younger, don't get a flu shot this year. Help us prioritize those who need to get the flu shot, the elderly and the young. The CDC, responsible for health in the United States, is setting those priorities and is allocating the flu vaccine accordingly. I haven't gotten a flu shot, and I don't intend to, because I want to make sure that those who are most vulnerable get treated. We have a problem with litigation in the United States of America. Vaccine manufacturers are worried about getting sued, and so therefore they have backed off from providing this kind of vaccine. One of the reasons I'm such a strong believer in legal reform is so that people aren't afraid of producing a product that is necessary for the health of our citizens and then end up getting sued in a court of law. But the best thing we can do now, Bob, given the circumstances with the company in England, is for those of us who are younger and healthy, don't get a flu shot.
Senator Kerry?
This really underscores the problem with the American healthcare system. It's not working for the American family. And it's gotten worse under President Bush over the course of the last years. 5 million Americans have lost their health insurance in this country. You got about 1 million right here in Arizona, just shy, 950,000 who have no health insurance at all. 82,000 Arizonians lost their health insurance under President Bush's watch. 223,000 kids in Arizona have no health insurance at all. All across our country, go to Ohio, 1.4 million Ohioans have no health insurance. 114,000 of them lost it under President Bush. Wisconsin, 82,000 Wisconsinites lost it under President Bush. This president has turned his back on the wellness of America. And there is no system. In fact, it's starting to fall apart, not because of lawsuits, though they are a problem, and John Edwards and I are committed to fixing them, but because of the larger issue that we don't cover Americans. Children across our country don't have health care. We're the richest country on the face of the planet, the only industrialized nation in the world not to do it. I have a plan to cover all Americans. We're going to make it affordable and accessible. We're going to let everybody buy into the same health care plan senators and congressmen give themselves.
Mr. President, would you like to add something?
I would. Thank you. I want to remind people listening tonight that a plan is not a litany of complaints. And a plan is not to lay out programs that you can't pay for. He just said he wants everybody to be able to buy into the same plan that senators and congressmen get. That costs the government $7,700 per family. If every family in America signed up, like the senator suggested, it would cost us $5 trillion over 10 years. It's an empty promise. It's called bait and switch.
Time's up.
Thank you.
Actually, it's not an empty promise. It's really interesting because the president used that very plan as a reason for seniors to accept his prescription drug plan. He said if it's good enough for the congressmen and senators to have choice, seniors ought to have choice. What we do is we have choice. I choose Blue Cross Blue Shield. Other senators, other congressmen choose other programs. But the fact is we're going to help Americans be able to buy into it. Those that can afford it are going to buy in themselves. We're not giving this away for nothing.
All right. Senator Kerry, a new question. Let's talk about economic security. You pledged during the last debate that you would not raise taxes on those making less than $200,000 a year. But the price of everything is going up, and we all know it. Healthcare costs, as you all have talking about, is skyrocketing, the cost of the war. My question is, how can you or any president, whoever is elected next time, keep that pledge without running this country deeper into debt and passing on more of the bills that we're running up to our children?
I'll tell you exactly how I can do it. By reinstating what President Bush took away, which is called pay-as-you-go. During the 1990s, we had pay-as-you-go rules. If you're going to pass something in the Congress, you have to show where you're going to pay for it and how. President Bush has taken, he's the only president in history to do this. He's also the only president since in 72 years to lose jobs. 1.6 million jobs lost. He's the only president to have incomes of families go down for the last 3 years. The only president to see exports go down. The only president to see the lowest level of business investment in our country as it is today. Now, I'm going to reverse that. I'm going to change that. We're going to restore the fiscal discipline we had in the 1990s. Every plan that I have laid out, my health care plan, my plan for education, my plan for kids to be able to get better college loans, I've shown exactly how I'm going to pay for those. And we start, we don't do it exclusively, but we start by rolling back George Bush's unaffordable tax cut for the wealthiest people, people earning more than $200,000 a year, and we pass, hopefully, the McCain-Kerry Commission, which identified some $60 billion that we can get. We shut the loophole, which has American workers actually subsidizing the loss of their own job. They just passed an expansion of that loophole in the last few days. $43 billion of giveaways, including favors to the oil and gas industry and to people importing ceiling fans from China. I'm going to stand up and fight for the American worker, and I'm going to do it in a way that's fiscally sound. I show how I pay for the health care, how we pay for the education. I have a manufacturing jobs credit. We pay for it by shutting that loophole overseas. We raise the student loans. I pay for it by changing the relationship with the banks. This president has never once vetoed one bill, first president in 100 years not to do that.
Mr. President.
Well, his rhetoric doesn't match his record. He'd been a senator for 20 years. He voted to increase taxes 98 times. When they tried to reduce taxes, he voted against that 127 times. He talks about being a fiscal conservative or fiscally sound, but he voted 277 times to waive the budget caps, which would have cost the taxpayers $4.2 trillion. He talks about PAYGO. I tell you what PAYGO means when you're a senator from Massachusetts, when you're a colleague of Ted Kennedy. PAYGO means you pay, and he goes ahead and spends. He's proposed $2.2 trillion of new spending, and yet the so-called tax on the rich, which is also a tax on many small business owners in America, raises $600 million by our account, $800 billion by his account. There is a tax gap. And guess who usually ends up filling the tax gap? The middle class. I proposed a detailed budget, Bob. I send up my budget man to the Congress. And he says, here's how we're going to reduce the deficit in half by 5 years. It requires pro-growth policies that grow our economy and fiscal sanity in the halls of Congress.
Let's go to a new question, Mr. President. 2 minutes, and let's continue on jobs. You know, there are all kinds of statistics out there, but I want to bring it down to an individual. Mr. President, what do you say to someone in this country who has lost his job to someone overseas who's being paid a fraction of what that job paid here in the United States?
I say, Bob, I've got policies to continue to grow our economy and create the jobs of the 21st century. And here's some help for you to go get an education. Here's some help for you to go to a community college. We've expanded trade adjustment assistance. We want to help pay for you to gain the skills necessary to fill the jobs of the 21st century. You know, there's a lot of talk about how to keep the economy growing. We talk about fiscal matters. But perhaps the best way to keep jobs here in America and to keep this economy growing is to make sure our education system works. I went to Washington to solve problems, and I saw a problem in the public education system in America. They're just shuffling too many kids through the system year after year, grade after grade, without learning the basics. And so we said, let's raise the standards. We're spending more money, but let's raise the standards and measure early and solve problems now before it's too late. No, education is how to help the person who's lost a job. Education is how to make sure that we've got a workforce that's productive and competitive. You've got four more years. I've got more to do to continue to raise standards, to continue to reward teachers in school districts that are working, to emphasize math and science in the classrooms, to continue to expand Pell Grants, to make sure that people have an opportunity to start their career with a college diploma. And so to the person you talk to, I say, here's some help. Here's some trade adjustment assistance money for you to go to a community college in your neighborhood, a community college which is providing the skills necessary to fill the jobs of the 21st century. And that's what we'd say to that person.
Senator Kerry.
I want you to notice how the president switched away from jobs and started talking about education principally. Let me come back in one moment to that, but I want to speak for a second, if I can, to what the president said about fiscal responsibility. Being lectured by the president on fiscal responsibility is a little bit like Tony Soprano talking to me about law and order in this country. This president has taken a $5.6 trillion surplus and turned it into deficits as far as the eye can see. Health care costs for the average American have gone up 64%. Tuitions have gone up 35%. Gasoline prices up 30%. Medicare premiums went up 17% a few days ago. Prescription drugs are up 12% a year. But guess what, America? The wages of Americans have gone down. The jobs that are being created in Arizona right now paying about $13,700 less than the jobs that we're losing. And the president just walks on by this problem. The fact is that he's cut job training money. $1 billion was cut. They only added a little bit back this year because it's an election year. They've cut the Pell Grants and the Perkins loans to help kids be able to go to college. They've cut the training money. They've wound up not even extending unemployment benefits and not even extending health care to those people who are unemployed. I'm going to do those things because that's what's right in America. Help workers to transition in every respect.
New question to you, Senator Kerry. 2 minutes. And it's still on jobs. You know, many experts say that a president really doesn't have much control over jobs. For example, if someone invents a machine that does the work of five people, that's progress. That's not the president's fault. So I ask you, is it fair to blame the administration entirely for this loss of jobs?
I don't blame them entirely for it. I blame the president for the things the president could do that has an impact on it. Outsourcing is going to happen. I've acknowledged that in union halls across the country. I've had shop stewards stand up and say, will you promise me you're going to stop all this outsourcing? And I've looked them in the eye and I've said, no, I can't do that. What I can promise you is that I will make the playing field as fair as possible. That I will, for instance, make certain that with respect to the tax system, that you as a worker in America are not subsidizing the loss of your job. Today, if you're an American business, you actually get a benefit for going overseas. You get to defer your taxes. So if you're looking at a competitive world, you say to yourself, hey, I do better overseas than I do here in America. That's not smart. I don't want American workers subsidizing the loss of their own job. And when I'm president, we're going to shut that loophole in a nanosecond, and we're going to use that money to lower corporate tax rates in America for all corporations, 5%, and we're going to have a manufacturing jobs credit and a job hiring credit so we actually help people be able to hire here. The second thing that we can do is provide a fair trade playing field. This president didn't stand up for Boeing when Airbus was violating international rules with subsidies. He discovered Boeing during the course of this campaign after I'd been talking about it for months. The fact is that the president had an opportunity to stand up and take on China for currency manipulation. There are companies that wanted to petition the administration. They were told, don't even bother. We're not going to listen to it. The fact is that there have been markets shut to us that we haven't stood up and fought for. I'm going to fight for a fair trade playing field for the American worker. And I will fight for the American worker just as hard as I fight for my own job. That's what the American worker wants. And if we do that, we can have an impact. Plus, we need fiscal discipline. Restore fiscal discipline, we'll do a lot better.
Mr. President.
Whew. Let me start with the Pell Grants. In his last litany of misstatements, he said, we cut Pell Grants. We've increased Pell Grants by 1 million students. That's a fact. You know, he talks to the workers. Let me talk to the workers. You got more money in your pocket as a result of the tax relief we passed, and he opposed. If you have a child, you got a $1,000 child credit. That's money in your pocket. If you're married, we reduced the marriage penalty. The code ought to encourage marriage, not discourage marriage. We created a 10% bracket to help lower-income Americans. A family of four making $40,000 received about $1,700 in tax relief. It's your money. The way my opponent talks, he said we're going to spend the government's money. No, we're spending your money. And when you have more money in your pocket, you're able to better afford things you want. I believe the role of government is to stand side by side with our citizens to help them realize their dreams, not tell citizens how to live their lives. My opponent talks about fiscal sanity. His record in the United States Senate does not match his rhetoric. He voted to increase taxes 98 times and to bust the budget 277 times.
Senator Kerry?
Bob, anybody can play with these votes. Everybody knows that. I have supported or voted for tax cuts over 600 times. I broke with my party in order to balance the budget. And Ronald Reagan signed into law the tax cut that we voted for. I voted for IRA tax cuts. I voted for small business tax cuts. But you know why the Pell Grants have gone up in their numbers? Because more people qualify for them because they don't have money. But they're not getting the $5,100 the president promised them. They're getting less money. There are more people who qualify. That's not what we want.
Senator, no one's playing with your votes. You voted to increase taxes 98 times. When they voted to, when they proposed reducing taxes, you voted against 126 times. You voted to violate the budget caps 277 times. You know, there's a mainstream in American politics, and you sit right on the far left bank. As a matter of fact, your record is such that Ted Kennedy, your colleague, is the conservative senator from Massachusetts.
Mr. President, let's get back to economic issues, but let's shift to some other questions here. Both of you are opposed to gay marriage. But to understand how you have come to that conclusion, I want to ask you a more basic question. Do you believe homosexuality is a choice?
You know, Bob, I don't know. I just don't know. I do know that we have a choice to make in America, and that is to treat people with tolerance and respect and dignity. It's important that we do that. I also know in a free society, people, consenting adults, can live the way they want to live. And that's to be honored. But as we respect someone's rights, and as we, you know, profess tolerance, we shouldn't change, or have to change, our basic views on the sanctity of marriage. I believe in the sanctity of marriage. I think it's very important that we protect marriage as an institution between a man and a woman. I proposed a constitutional amendment. The reason I did so was because I was worried that activist judges are actually defining the definition of marriage. And the surest way to protect marriage between a man and woman is to amend the Constitution. It has also the benefit of allowing citizens to participate in the process. After all, when you amend the Constitution, state legislatures must participate in the ratification of the Constitution. I'm deeply concerned that judges are making those decisions and not the citizenry of the United States. You know, Congress passed a law called DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. My opponent was against it. It basically protected states from the action of one state to another. It also defined marriage as between a man and a woman. But I'm concerned that that will get overturned. And if it gets overturned, then we'll end up with marriage being defined by courts. And I don't think that's in our nation's interest.
Senator Kerry?
We're all God's children, Bob. And I think if you were to talk to Dick Cheney's daughter, who is a lesbian, she would tell you that she's being who she was. She's being who she was born as. I think if you talk to anybody, it's not a choice. I've met people who struggled with this for years.
people who were in a marriage because they were living a sort of convention, and they struggled with it. And I've met wives who are supportive of their husbands or vice versa when they finally sort of broke out and allowed themselves to live who they were, who they felt God had made them. I think we have to respect that. The President and I share the belief that marriage is between a man and a woman. I believe that. I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. But I also believe that because we are the United States of America, we're a country with a great, unbelievable constitution with rights that we afford people, that you can't discriminate in the workplace. You can't discriminate in the rights that you afford people. You can't disallow someone the right to visit their partner in a hospital. You have to allow people to transfer property, which is why I'm for partnership rights and so forth. Now, with respect to DOMA and the marriage laws, the states have always been able to manage those laws, and they're proving today, every state, that they can manage them adequately.
Senator Kerry, a new question for you. The New York Times reports that some Catholic archbishops are telling their church members that it would be a sin to vote for a candidate like you because you support a woman's right to choose an abortion and unlimited stem cell research. What is your reaction to that?
I respect their views. I completely respect their views. I am a Catholic, and I grew up learning how to respect those views, but I disagree with them, as do many. I believe that I can't legislate or transfer to another American citizen my article of faith. What is an article of faith for me is not something that I can legislate on somebody who doesn't share that article of faith. I believe the choice is a woman's choice, between a woman, God, and her doctor. And that's why I support that. Now, I will not allow somebody to come in and change Roe v. Wade. The president has never said whether or not he would do that. But we know from the people he's trying to point the court he wants to. I will not. I will defend the right of Roe v. Wade. Now, with respect to religion, you know, as I said, I grew up a Catholic. I was an altar boy. I know that throughout my life this has made a difference to me. And as President Kennedy said when he ran for president, he said, I'm not running to be a Catholic president. I'm running to be a president who happens to be Catholic. Now, my faith affects everything that I do and choose. There's a great passage of the Bible that says, what does it mean, my brother, to say you have faith if there are no deeds? Faith without works is dead. And I think that everything you do in public life has to be guided by your faith, affected by your faith, but without transferring it in any official way to other people. For that's why I fight against poverty. That's why I fight to clean up the environment, protect this earth. That's why I fight for equality and justice. All of those things come out of that fundamental teaching and belief of faith. But I know this, that President Kennedy in his inaugural address told all of us that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. And that's what we have to say. I think that's the test of public service.
Mr. President?
I think it's important to promote a culture of life. I think a hospitable society is a society where every being counts and every person matters. I believe the ideal world is one in which every child is protected and long welcome to life. I understand there's great differences on this issue of abortion. But I believe reasonable people can come together and put good law in place that will help reduce the number of abortions. Take, for example, the ban on partial birth abortion. It's a brutal practice. People from both political parties came together in the halls of Congress and voted overwhelmingly to ban that practice. It made a lot of sense. My opponent, in that he's out of the mainstream, voted against that law. What I'm saying is that as we promote life and promote a culture of life, surely there are ways we can work together to reduce the number of abortions, continue to promote adoption laws. That's a great alternative to abortion. Continue to fund and promote maternity group homes. I will continue to promote abstinence programs. The last debate, my opponent said his wife was involved with those programs. That's great, and I appreciate that very much. All of us ought to be involved with programs that provide a viable alternative to abortion.
Mr. President, let's have a new question. It goes to you, and let's get back to economic issues. Health insurance costs have risen over 36% over the last 4 years, according to the Washington Post. We're paying more, we're getting less. I would like to ask you, who bears responsibility for this? Is it the government? Is it the insurance companies? Is it the lawyers? Is it the doctors? Is it the administration?
Gosh, I sure hope it's not the administration. No, there is a, look, there's a systemic problem. Healthcare costs are on the rise because the consumers are not involved in the decision-making process. Most healthcare costs are covered by third parties, and therefore the actual user of healthcare is not the purchaser of healthcare. And there's no market forces involved with healthcare. It's one of the reasons I'm a strong believer in what they call health savings accounts. These are accounts that allow somebody to buy a low-premium, high-deductible, catastrophic plan and couple it with tax-free savings. Businesses can contribute, employees can contribute on a contractual basis, but this is a way to make sure people are actually involved with the decision-making process on health care. Secondly, I do believe the lawsuits, I know that the lawsuits are causing health care costs to rise in America. That's why I'm such a strong believer in medical liability reform. At last debate, my opponent said, well, these lawsuits only cause costs to go up by 1%. Well, he didn't include the defensive practice of medicine that costs the federal government some $28 billion a year and costs our society between $60 and $100 billion a year. Thirdly, one of the reasons why there's still high costs in medicine is because this is they don't use an information technology. It's like if you looked at it's the equivalent of the buggy and horse days compared to other industries here in America. And so we've got to introduce high technology into healthcare. We're beginning to do it. We're changing the language. We want there to be electronic medical records to cut down on error as well as reduce costs. People tell me that when the healthcare field is fully integrated with information technology, it'll wring some 20% of the cost out of the system. And finally, moving generic drugs to the market quicker. And so there's four ways to help control the costs in healthcare.
Senator Kerry.
The reason healthcare costs are getting higher, one of the principal reasons is that this administration has stood in the way of common sense efforts that would have reduced the costs. Let me give you a prime example. In the Senate, we passed the right of Americans to import drugs from Canada. But the president and his friends took it out in the House, and now you don't have that right. The president blocked you from the right to have less expensive drugs from Canada. We also wanted Medicare to be able to negotiate bulk purchasing. The VA does that. The VA provides lower cost drugs to our veterans. We could have done that in Medicare. Medicare is paid for by the American taxpayer. Medicare belongs to you. Medicare is for seniors who are many of them on fixed income to lift them out of poverty. But rather than help you, the taxpayer, have a lower cost, rather than help seniors have less expensive drugs, the president made it illegal for Medicare to actually go out and bargain for lower prices. Result, $139 billion windfall profit to the drug companies coming out of your pockets. That's a large part of your 17% increase in Medicare premiums. When I'm president, I'm sending that back to Congress, and we're going to get a real prescription drug benefit. Now, we also have people sicker because they don't have health insurance. So whether it's diabetes or cancer, they come to hospitals later, and it costs America more. We've got to have health care for all Americans.
Well, Senator, go ahead, Mr. President.
I think it's important, since he talked about the Medicare plan. Has he been in the United States Senate for 20 years? He has no record on reforming of health care. No record at all. He introduced some 300 bills, and he's passed five. No record of leadership. I came to Washington to solve problems. I was deeply concerned about seniors having to choose between prescription drugs and food. And so I led. And in 2006, our seniors will get a prescription drug coverage in Medicare.
Senator Kerry, 30 seconds.
Once again, the president's misleading America. I've actually passed 56 individual bills that I've personally written. And in addition to that, they're not always under my name. There is amendments in certain bills. But more importantly, with respect to the question of no record, I did write, and I was one of the original authors of the early childhood health care and the expansion of health care that we did in the middle of the 1990s, and I'm very proud of that. So, President's wrong.
Let me direct the next question to you, Senator Kerry, and again, let's stay on health care. You have, as you have proposed, and as the President has commented on tonight, proposed a massive plan to extend health care coverage to children. You're also talking about the government picking up a big part of the catastrophic bills that people get at the hospital. And you have said that you can pay for this by rolling back the President's tax cut on the upper 2%. You heard the President say earlier tonight that it's going to cost a whole lot more money than that. I just ask you, where are you going to get the money?
Well, two leading national news networks have both said the President's characterization of my health care plan is incorrect. One called it fiction, the other called it untrue. The fact is that my health care plan, America, is very simple. It gives you the choice. I don't force you to do anything. It's not a government plan. The government doesn't require you to do anything. You choose your doctor. You choose your plan. If you don't want to take the offer of the plan that I want to put forward, you don't have to. You can keep what you have today, keep a high deductible, keep high premiums, keep a high copay, keep low benefits, but I got a better plan. And I don't think a lot of people are going to want to keep what they have today. Here's what I do. We take over Medicaid children from the state so that every child in America is covered. And in exchange, if the states want to, they're not forced to, they can choose to, they cover individuals up to 300% of poverty. It's their choice. I think they'll choose it because it's a net plus of $5 billion to them. We allow you, if you choose to, you don't have to, but we give you broader competition to allow you to buy into the same health care plan that senators and congressmen give themselves. If it's good enough for us, it's good enough for every American. I believe that your health care is just as important as any politician in Washington, D.C. If you want to buy into it, you can. We give you broader competition. That helps lower prices. In addition to that, we're going to allow people 55 to 64 to buy into Medicare early. And most importantly, we give small business a 50% tax credit so that after we lower the cost of health care, they also get, whether they're self-employed or a small business, a lower cost to be able to cover their employees. Now, what happens is when you begin to get people covered like that, for instance, in diabetes, if you diagnose diabetes early, you could save $50 billion in the healthcare system of America by avoiding surgery and dialysis. It works, and I'm going to offer it to America.
Mr. President.
In all due respect, I'm not so sure it is credible to quote leading news organizations about... Oh, never mind. Anyway, let me quote the Lewin Report. The Lewin Report is a group of folks who are not politically affiliated. They analyzed the senator's plan. It cost $1.2 trillion. The Lewin Report accurately noted that there are going to be 20 million people, over 20 million people added to government-controlled health care. It'll be the largest increase in government health care ever. If you raise the Medicaid to 300%, it provides an incentive for small businesses not to provide private insurance to their employees. Why should they insure somebody when the government's going to insure it for them? It's estimated that 8 million people will go from private insurance to government insurance. We have a fundamental difference of opinion. I think government-run health will lead to poor quality health, will lead to rationing, will lead to less choice. Once a health care program ends up in a line item in the federal government budget, it leads to more controls. And just look at other countries that have tried to have federally controlled health care. They have poor quality health care. Our health care system is the envy of the world because we believe in making sure that the decisions are made by doctors and patients, not by officials in the nation's capital.
Senator? The President just said that government-run health care results in poor quality. Now, maybe that explains why he hasn't fully funded the VA, and the VA hospital is having trouble, and veterans are complaining. Maybe that explains why Medicare patients are complaining about being pushed off of Medicare. He doesn't adequately fund it. But let me just say to America, I am not proposing a government-run program. That's not what I have. I have Blue Cross Blue Shield. Senators and congressmen have a wide choice. Americans ought to have it, too.
Mr. President.
We talk about the VA. We've increased VA funding by $22 billion in the 4 years since I've been president. That's twice the amount that my predecessor increased VA funding. Of course we're meeting our obligation to our veterans, and the veterans know that. We're expanding veterans' health care throughout the country. We're aligning facilities where the veterans live now. Veterans are getting very good health care under my administration, and they will continue to do so during the next 4 years.
Mr. President, the next question is to you. We all know that Social Security is running out of money, and it has to be fixed. You have proposed to fix it by letting people put some of the money collected to pay benefits into private savings accounts, but the critics are saying that's going to mean finding $1 trillion over the next 10 years to continue paying benefits as those accounts are being set up. So where do you get the money? Are you going to have to increase the deficit by that much over 10 years?
Well, first let me make sure that every senior listening today understands that when we're talking about reforming Social Security, that they'll still get their checks. I remember the 2000 campaign. People said, if George W. gets elected, your check will be taken away. Well, people got their checks, and they'll continue to get their checks. There is a problem for our youngsters, a real problem. And if we don't act today, the problem will be valued in the trillions. And so I think we need to think differently. We'll honor our commitment to our seniors, but for our children, our grandchildren, we need to have a different strategy. And recognizing that, I called together a group of our fellow citizens to study the issue. It was a committee chaired by the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan of New York, a Democrat. And they came up with a variety of ideas for people to look at. I believe that younger workers ought to be allowed to take some of their own money and put it in a personal savings account, because I understand that they need to get better rates of return than the rates of return being given in the current Social Security Trust. And the compounding rate of interest effect will make it more likely that the Social Security system is solvent for our children and our grandchildren. I will work with Republicans and Democrats. It will be a vital issue in my second term. It is an issue that I'm willing to take on. And so I bring Republicans and Democrats together, and we're of course going to have to consider the cost. But I want to warn my fellow citizens, the cost of doing nothing, the cost of saying the current system is okay, far exceeds the cost of trying to make sure we save the system for our children.
Senator Kerry.
You just heard the president say that young people ought to be able to take money out of Social Security and put it in their own accounts. Now, my fellow Americans, that's an invitation to disaster. The CBO said very clearly that if you were to adopt the president's plan, there'll be a $2 trillion hole in Social Security, because today's workers pay into the system for today's retirees. And the CBO said, that's the Congressional Budget Office, it's bipartisan, they said that there would have to be a cut in benefits of 25% to 40%. Now, the president has never explained to America, ever, hasn't done it tonight, where does the transitional money, that $2 trillion, come from? He's already got $3 trillion, according to the Washington Post, of expenses that he's put on the line from his convention and the promises of this campaign, none of which are paid for. Not one of them are paid for. The fact is that the president is driving the largest deficits in American history. He's broken the pay-as-you-go rules. I have a record of fighting for fiscal responsibility. In 1985, I was one of the first Democrats, broke with my party. We balanced the budget in the 90s. We paid down the debt for 2 years. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to protect Social Security. I will not privatize it. I will not cut the benefits. And we're going to be fiscally responsible, and we will take care of Social Security.
Let me just stay on Social Security with a new question for Senator Kerry, because, Senator Kerry, you have just said you will not cut benefits. Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, says there's no way that Social Security can pay retirees what we have promised them unless we recalibrate. What he's suggesting, we're going to have to cut benefits, or we're going to have to raise retirement age. We may have to take some other reform. But if you've just said you've promised no changes, does that mean you're just going to leave this as a problem, another problem for our children to solve?
Absolutely not, Bob. This is the same thing we heard. I remember I appeared on Meet the Press with Tim Russert in 1990-something. We heard the same thing. We fixed it. In fact, we put together a $5.6 trillion surplus in the 90s that was for the purpose of saving Social Security. If you take the tax cut that the President of the United States has given, President Bush gave to Americans in the top 1% of America. Just that tax cut that went to the top 1% of America would have saved Social Security until the year 2075. The president decided to give it to the wealthiest Americans in a tax cut. Now, Alan Greenspan, who I think has done a terrific job in monetary policy, supports the president's tax cut. I don't. I support it for the middle class, not that part of it that goes to people earning more than $200,000 a year. And when I roll it back and we invest in the things that I've talked about to move our economy, we're going to grow sufficiently that we begin to cut the deficit in half and we get back to where we were at the end of the 1990s when we balanced the budget and paid down the debt of this country. Now, we can do that. Now, if later on, after a period of time, we find that Social Security is in trouble, we'll pull together the top experts of the country, we'll do exactly what we did in the 1990s, and we'll make whatever adjustment is necessary. But the first and most important thing is to start creating jobs in America. The jobs the president is creating pay $9,000 less than the jobs that we're losing. And this is the first president in 72 years to preside over an economy in America that has lost jobs, 1.6 million jobs. 11 other presidents, 6 Democrats and 5 Republicans, had wars, had recessions, had great difficulties. None of them lost jobs the way this president has. I have a plan to put America back to work. And if we're fiscally responsible and put America back to work, we're going to fix Social Security.
Mr. President.
He forgot to tell you he voted to tax Social Security benefits more than one time. I didn't hear any plan to fix Social Security. I heard more of the same. He talks about middle-class tax cuts. That's exactly where the tax cuts went. Most of the tax cuts went to low- and middle-income Americans. And now the tax code is more fair. 20% of the upper-income people pay about 80% of the taxes in America today because of how we structured the tax cuts. People listening out there know the benefits of the tax cuts we passed. If you have a child, you got tax relief. If you're married, you got tax relief. If you pay any tax at all, you got tax relief. All of which was opposed by my opponent. And the tax relief was important to spur consumption and investment to get us out of this recession. People need to remember, 6 months prior to my arrival, the stock market started to go down. And it was one of the largest declines in our history. And then we had a recession and we got attacked, which cost us 1 million jobs. But we acted. I led the Congress. We passed tax relief. And now this economy is growing. We had 1.9 million new jobs over the last 13 months. Sure, there's more work to do. But the way to make sure our economy grows is not to raise taxes on small business owners, is not to increase the scope of the federal government, is to make sure we have fiscal sanity and keep taxes low.
Let's go to a new question, Mr. President. I got more email this week on this question than any other question, and it is about immigration. I'm told that at least 8,000 people cross our borders illegally every day. Some people believe this is a security issue, as you know. Some believe it's an economic issue. Some see it as a human rights issue. How do you see it, and what do we need to do about it?
I see it as a serious problem. I see it as a security issue. I see it as an economic issue, and I see it as a human rights issue. We're increasing the border security of the United States. We've got 1,000 more Border Patrol agents on the southern border. We're using new equipment. We're using unmanned vehicles to spot people coming across. And we'll continue to do so over the next 4 years. It's a subject I'm very familiar with. After all, I was a border governor for a while. Many people are coming to this country for economic reasons. They're coming here to work. If you can make 50 cents in the heart of Mexico, for example, or make $5 here in America, $5.15, you're going to come here if you're worth your salt, if you want to put food on the table for your families. And that's what's happening. And so in order to take pressure off the border, in order to make the borders more secure, I believe there ought to be a temporary worker card that allows a willing worker and a willing employer to mate up, so long as there's not an American willing to do the job, to join up in order to be able to fulfill the employer's needs. That has the benefit of making sure our employers aren't breaking the law as they try to fill their workforce needs. It makes sure that the people coming across the border are humanely treated, that they're not kept in the shadows of our society, that they're able to go back and forth to see their families,
See, the card will have a period of time attached to it. It also means it takes pressure off the border. If somebody is coming here to work with a card, it means they're not going to have to sneak across the border. It means our Border Patrol will be more likely to be able to focus on doing their job. Now, it's very important for our citizens to also know that I don't believe we ought to have amnesty. I don't think we ought to reward illegal behavior. There are plenty of people standing in line to become a citizen, and we ought not to crowd these people ahead of them in line. If they want to become a citizen, they can stand in line too. And here's where my opponent and I differ. In September 2003, he supported amnesty for illegal aliens.
Time's up. Senator?
Let me just answer one part of the last question quickly, and then I'll come to immigration. The American middle-class family isn't making it right now, Bob. And what the president said about the tax cuts has been wiped out by the increase in health care, the increase in gasoline, the increase in tuitions, the increase in prescription drugs. The fact is the take-home pay of a typical American family as a share of national income is lower than it's been since 1929. And the take-home pay of the richest 0.1% of Americans is the highest it's been since 1928. Under President Bush, the middle class has seen their tax burden go up, and the wealthiest tax burden has gone down. Now, that's wrong. Now, with respect to immigration reform, the president broke his promise on immigration reform. He said he would reform it. 4 years later, he's now promising another plan. Here's what I'll do. Number one, the borders are more leaking today than they were before 9/11. The fact is, we haven't done what we need to do to toughen up our borders, and I will. Secondly, we need a guest worker program, but if it's all we have, it's not going to solve the problem. The second thing we need is to crack down on illegal hiring. It's against the law in the United States to hire people illegally, and we ought to be enforcing that law properly. And thirdly, we need an earned legalization program for people who've been here for a long time, stayed out of trouble, got a job, paid their taxes, and their kids are American. We've got to start moving them towards full citizenship out of the shadows.
You want to respond, Mr. President?
Well, to say that the borders are not as protected as they were prior to September the 11th shows he doesn't know the borders. They're much better protected today than they were when I was the governor of Texas. And we got much more manpower, much more equipment there. It's just he just doesn't understand how the borders work, evidently, to say that. That is an outrageous claim. And we'll continue to protect our borders. We'll continue to increase manpower and equipment.
Senator?
4,000 people a day coming across the border. The fact is that we now have people from the Middle East, allegedly, coming across the border. And we're not doing what we ought to do in terms of the technology. We have iris identification technology. We have thumbprint, fingerprint technology today. We can know who the people are, that they're really the people they say they are when they cross the border. We can speed it up. There are huge delays. The fact is our borders are not as secure as they ought to be, and I'll make them secure.
Next question to you, Senator Kerry. The gap between
we are going to pause 5 seconds for our affiliates on Air America for a station identification.
The minimum wage has been stuck at, what, $5.15 an hour now for about 7 years. Is it time to raise it?
Well, I'm glad you raised that question. It's long overdue time to raise the minimum wage. And America, this is one of those issues that separates the president and myself. We have fought to try to raise the minimum wage in the last years. But the Republican leadership of the House and Senate won't even let us have a vote on it. We're not allowed to vote on it. They don't want to raise the minimum wage. The minimum wage is the lowest minimum wage value it has been in our nation in 50 years. If we raise the minimum wage, which I will do over several years to $7 an hour, 9.2 million women who are trying to raise their families would earn another $3,800 a year. The president has denied 9.2 million women $3,800 a year, but he doesn't hesitate to fight for $136,000 to a millionaire. 1% of America got $89 billion last year in a tax cut. But people working hard, playing by the rules, trying to take care of their kids, family values that we're supposed to value so much in America. I'm tired of politicians who talk about family values and don't value families. What we need to do is raise the minimum wage. We also need to hold on to equal pay. Women work for 76 cents on the dollar for the same work that men do. That's not right in America. And we had an initiative that we were working on to raise women's pay. They've cut it off. They've stopped it.
They don't enforce these kinds of things. Now, I think that it is a matter of fundamental right that if we raised the minimum wage, 15 million Americans would be positively affected. We'd put money into the hands of people who work hard, who obey the rules, who play for the American dream. And if we did that, we'd have more consumption ability in America, which is what we need right now in order to kick our economy into gear. I will fight tooth and nail to pass the minimum wage.
Mr. President. Actually, Mitch McConnell had a minimum wage plan that I supported, that it would have increased the minimum wage. But let me talk about what's really important for the worker you're referring to. And that's to make sure the education system works. It's to make sure we raise standards. Listen, the No Child Left Behind Act is really a jobs act when you think about it. The No Child Left Behind Act says we'll raise standards, we'll increase federal spending, but in return for extra spending, we now want people to measure, states and local jurisdictions to measure, to show us whether or not a child can read or write or add and subtract. You cannot solve a problem unless you diagnose the problem. And we weren't diagnosing problems, and therefore just kids were being shuffled through the school. And guess who would get shuffled through? Children whose parents wouldn't speak English as a first language just moved through. Many inner city kids just moved through. We've stopped that practice now by measuring early. And when we find a problem, we spend extra money to correct it. I remember a lady in Houston, Texas, telling me, reading is the new civil right, and she's right. In order to make sure people have jobs for the 21st century, we've got to get it right in the education system. And we're beginning to close a minority achievement gap now. You see, we'll never be able to compete in the 21st century unless we have an education system that doesn't quit on children, an education system that raises standards, an education that makes sure there's excellence in every classroom.
Mr. President, I want to go back to something Senator Kerry said earlier tonight and ask a follow-up of my own. He said, and this will be a new question to you, he said that you had never said whether you would like to overturn Roe v. Wade. So I'd ask you directly.
What he's asking me is, will I have a litmus test for my judges? And the answer is, no, I will not have a litmus test. I will pick judges who will interpret the Constitution, but I'll have no litmus test.
Senator Kerry, you'd like
to respond?
Is that
a new question?
That's a new question for Senator, for President Bush.
Which time limit are we in?
You have 90 seconds.
Thank you very much. Well, again, the president didn't answer the question. I'll answer it straight to America. I'm not going to appoint a judge to the court who's going to undo a constitutional right, whether it's the First Amendment or the Fifth Amendment or some other right that's given under our courts today, or under the Constitution. And I believe that the right of choice is a constitutional right. So I don't intend to see it undone. Clearly, the president wants to leave an ambivalence or intends to undo it. Now, let me go a step further. We have a long distance yet to travel in terms of fairness in America. I don't know how you can govern in this country when you look at New York City and you see that 50% of the black males there are unemployed. When you see 40% of Hispanic children or black children in some cities dropping out of high school. And yet the president, who talks about No Child Left Behind, refused to fully fund by $28 billion that particular program so you can make a difference in the lives of those young people. Now, right here in Arizona, that difference would have been $131 million to the state of Arizona to help its kids be able to have better education and to lift the property tax burden from its citizens. The president reneged on his promise to fund No Child Left Behind. He'll tell you he's raised the money, and he has, but he didn't put in what he promised, and that makes a difference in the lives of our children.
Yes, sir.
Two things. One, he clearly has a litmus test for his judges, which I disagree with. And secondly, only a liberal senator from Massachusetts would say that a 49% increase in funding for education was not enough. We've increased funds, but more importantly, we reform the system to make sure that we solve problems early before they're too late. He talked about the unemployed. Absolutely, we've got to make sure they get educated. He talked about children whose parents don't speak English as a first language. Absolutely, we've got to make sure they get educated. And that's what the No Child Left Behind Act does.
Senator.
You don't measure it by a percentage increase. Mr. President, you measure it by whether you're getting the job done. 500,000 kids lost after-school programs because of your budget. Now, that's not in my gut. That's not my value system. And certainly not so that the wealthiest people in America can walk away with another tax cut. $89 billion last year to the top 1% of Americans, but kids lost their after-school programs. You be the judge.
All right, let's go to another question, and it is to Senator Kerry. You have 2 minutes, sir. Senator, the last debate, President Bush said he did not favor a draft. You agreed with him. But our National Guard and Reserve forces are being severely strained because many of them are being held beyond their enlistments. Some of them say that it's a backdoor draft. Is there any relief that could be offered to these brave Americans and their families? If you became president, Senator Kerry, what would you do about this situation of holding National Guard and reservists for these extended periods of time and these repeated call-ups that they're now facing?
Well, I think the fact that they're facing these repeated call-ups, some of them two and three deployments, and there's a stop-loss policy that prevents people from being able to get out when their time was up, is a reflection of the bad judgment this president exercised in how he has engaged in the world and deployed our forces. Our military is overextended. 9 out of 10 active duty Army divisions are either in Iraq, going to Iraq, or have come back from Iraq. One way or the other, they're wrapped up in it. Now, I've proposed adding 2 active duty divisions to the armed forces of the United States, one combat, one support. In addition, I'm going to double the number of special forces so that we can fight a more effective war on terror with less pressure on the National Guard and Reserve. And what I would like to do is see the National Guard and Reserve be deployed differently here in our own country. There's much we can do with them with respect to homeland security. We ought to be doing that. And that would relieve an enormous amount of pressure. But the most important thing to relieve the pressure on all of our armed forces is, frankly, to run a foreign policy that recognizes that America is strongest when we are working with real alliances, when we are sharing the burdens of the world by working through our statesmanship at the highest levels and our diplomacy to bring other nations to our side. I've said it before, I say it again. I believe the president broke faith with the American people in the way that he took this nation to war. He said he would work through a real alliance. He said in Cincinnati we would plan carefully. We would take every precaution. Well, we didn't. And the result is our forces today are overextended. The fact is that he did not choose to go to war as a last resort. And America now is paying already $120 billion, up to $200 billion before we're finished, and much more probably. And that is the result of this president taking his eye off of Osama bin Laden.
Mr. President.
The best way to take the pressure off our troops to succeed in Iraq is to train Iraqis so they can do the hard work of democracy, is to give them a chance to defend their country, precisely what we're doing. We'll have 125,000 troops trained by the end of this year. I remember going on an airplane in Bangor, Maine, to say thanks to the reservists and guard that were headed overseas from Tennessee and North Carolina, Georgia. Some of them had been there before. People I talked to, the spirits were high. They didn't view their service as a backdoor draft. They viewed their service as an opportunity to serve their country. My opponent, Senator, talks about foreign policy. In our first debate, he proposed America pass a global test. In order to defend ourselves, we have to get international approval. That's one of the major differences we have about defending our country. I work with allies. I work with friends. We'll continue to build strong coalitions. But I will never turn over our national security decision to leaders of other countries. We'll be resolute. We'll be strong. And we'll wage a comprehensive war against the terrorists.
Senator.
I have never suggested a test where we turn over our security to any nation. In fact, I've said the opposite. I will never turn the security of the United States over to any nation. No nation will ever have a veto over us. But I think it makes sense. I think most Americans in their guts know that we ought to pass a sort of truth standard. That's how you gain legitimacy with your own country people
And that's how you gain legitimacy in the world. But I'll never fail to protect the United States of America.
In 1990, there was a vast coalition put together to run Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. The international community, the international world said this is the right thing to do. But when it came time to authorize the use of force on the Senate floor, my opponent voted against the use of force. Apparently, you can't pass any test under his vision of the world.
Mr. President, new question, 2 minutes. You said that if Congress would vote to extend the ban on assault weapons, that you'd sign the legislation. But you did nothing to encourage the Congress to extend it. Why not?
Actually, I made my intentions, my views clear. I did think we ought to extend the assault weapons ban, and was told the fact that the bill was never going to move because the Republicans and Democrats were against the assault weapon ban, people of both parties. Now, I believe law-abiding citizens ought to be able to own a gun. I believe in background checks at gun shows or anywhere to make sure that guns don't get in the hands of people that shouldn't have them. But the best way to protect our citizens from guns is to prosecute those who commit crimes with guns. And that's why early in my administration I called the Attorney General and the U.S. attorneys and said, put together a task force all around the country to prosecute those who commit crimes with guns. And the prosecutions are up by about 68%, I believe, is the number. Neighborhoods are safer when we crack down on people who commit crimes with guns. To me, that's the best way to secure America.
Senator?
I believe it was a failure of presidential leadership not to reauthorize the assault weapons ban. I am a hunter. I'm a gun owner. I've been a hunter since I was a kid, 12, 13 years old. And I respect the Second Amendment, and I will not tamper with the Second Amendment. But I'll tell you this. I'm also a former law enforcement officer. I ran one of the largest district attorney offices in America, one of the 10 largest. I've put people behind bars for the rest of their life. I've broken up organized crime. I know something about prosecuting. And most of the law enforcement agencies in America wanted that assault weapons ban. They don't want to go into a drug bust and be facing an AK-47. I was hunting in Iowa last year with the sheriff from one of the counties there, and he pointed to a house in back of us and said, "See that house over there? We just did a drug bust a week earlier. And the guy we arrested had an AK-47 lying on the bed right beside him." Because of the president's decision today, law enforcement officers will walk into a place that will be more dangerous. Terrorists can now come into America and go to a gun show and, without even a background check, buy an assault weapon today. And that's what Osama bin Laden's handbook said, because we captured it in Afghanistan and encouraged them to do it. So I believe America is less safe. If Tom DeLay or someone in the House said to me, "Sorry, we don't have the votes," I'd have said, "Then we're going to have a fight." And I'd have taken it out to the country, and I'd have had every law enforcement officer in the country visit those congressmen. We'd have won what Bill Clinton won.
Let's go to a new question. For you, Senator Kerry, 2 minutes. Affirmative action. Do you see a need for affirmative action programs, or have we moved far enough along that we no longer need to use race and gender as a factor in school admissions and federal and state contracts and so on?
No, Bob, regrettably, we have not moved far enough along. And I regret to say that this administration has even blocked steps that could help us move further along. I'll give you an example. I've served on the Small Business Committee for a long time. I was chairman of it once. Now I'm the senior Democrat on it. We used to, you know, we have a goal there for minority set-aside programs to try to encourage ownership in the country. They don't reach those goals. They don't even fight to reach those goals. They've tried to undo them. The fact is that in too many parts of our country, we still have discrimination. And affirmative action is not just something that applies to people of color. Some people have a mistaken view of it in America. It also is with respect to women. It's with respect to other efforts to try to reach out and be inclusive in our country. I think that we have a long way to go, regrettably. If you look at what's happened, we've made progress. I want to say that at the same time. During the Clinton years, as you may recall, there was a fight over affirmative action. And there were many people, like myself, who opposed quotas, who felt there were places where it was overreaching. So we had a policy called mend it, don't end it. We fixed it. And we fixed it for a reason. Because there are too many people still in this country who feel the stark resistance of racism.
And so we have a distance to travel. As president, I will make certain we travel it. Now, let me just share something. This president is the first president ever, I think, not to meet with NAACP. This is a president who hasn't met with the Black Congressional Caucus. This is a president who has not met with the civil rights leadership of our country. If a president doesn't reach out and bring people in and be inclusive, then how are we going to get over those barriers? I see that as part of my job as president, and I'll make my best effort to do it.
Mr. President.
Well, first of all, it is just not true that I haven't met with the Black Congressional Caucus. I met with the Black Congressional Caucus at the White House. And secondly, like my opponent, I don't agree well. I have quotas. I agree. We shouldn't have quotas. But we ought to have an aggressive effort to make sure people are educated, to make sure when they get out of high school there's Pell Grants available for them, which is what we've done. We've expanded Pell Grants by a million students. Do you realize today in America we spend $73 billion to help 10 million low- and middle-income families better afford college? That's the access I believe is necessary, is to make sure every child learns to read, write, add, and subtract early, to be able to build on that education by going to college so they can start their careers with a college diploma. I believe the best way to help our small businesses is not only through small business loans, which we have increased since I've been the President of the United States, but to unbundle government contracts so people have a chance to be able to bid and receive a contract to help get their business going. Minority ownership of businesses are up because we create an environment for the entrepreneurial spirit to be strong. I believe part of a hopeful society is one in which somebody owns something. Today in America, more minorities own a home than ever before. And that's hopeful. And that's positive.
Mr. President, let's go to a new question. You were asked before the invasion or after the invasion of Iraq, if you had checked with your dad, and I believe, I don't remember the quote exactly, but I believe you said you had checked with a higher authority. I would like to ask you, what part does your faith play on your policy decisions?
First, my faith plays a big part in my life, and that's when I was answering that question, what I was really saying to the person was that I pray a lot, and I do. And my faith is very personal. I pray for strength. I pray for wisdom. I pray for our troops in harm's way. I pray for my family. I pray for my little girls. But I'm mindful in a free society that people can worship if they want to or not. You're equally an American if you choose to worship an Almighty and if you choose not to. If you're a Christian, you're a Muslim, you're equally an American. That's the great thing about America, is the right to worship the way you see fit. Prayer and religion sustain me. I receive calmness in the storms of the presidency. I love the fact that people pray for me and my family all around the country. Somebody asked me one time, well, how do you know? I said, I just feel it. Religion is an important part. I never want to impose my religion on anybody else. But when I make decisions, I stand on principle. And the principles are derived from who I am. I believe we ought to love our neighbor like we love ourselves. That's manifested in public policy through the faith-based initiative where we've unleashed the armies of compassion to help heal people who hurt. I believe that God wants everybody to be free. That's what I believe. And that's one part of my foreign policy. In Afghanistan, I believe that the freedom there is a gift from the Almighty. And I can't tell you how encouraged I am to see freedom on the march. And so my principles that I make decisions on are part of me, and religion is a part of me.
Senator Kerry?
Well, I respect everything that the president has said, and certainly respect his faith. I think it's important, and I share it. I think that he just said that freedom is a gift from the Almighty. Everything is a gift from the Almighty. And as I measure the words of the Bible, and we all do, different people measure different things, the Quran, the Torah, or, you know, Native Americans who gave me a blessing the other day had their own special sense of connectedness to a higher being. And people all find their ways to express it. I was taught, I went to a church school, and I was taught that the two greatest commandments are love the Lord your God with all your mind, your body, and your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And frankly, I think we have a lot more loving of our neighbor to do in this country and on this planet. We have a separate and unequal school system in the United States of America. There's one for the people who have, and there's one for the people who don't have. And we're struggling with that today. The President and I have a difference of opinion about how we live out our sense of our faith. I talked about it earlier when I talked about the works and faith without works being dead. I think we got a lot more work to do. And as President, I will always respect everybody's right to practice religion as they choose or not to practice, because that's part of America.
Senator Kerry, after 9/11, and this is a new question for you, it seemed to me that the country came together as I've never seen it come together since World War II. But some of that seems to have melted away. I think it's fair to say we've become pretty polarized, perhaps because of the political season. But if you were elected president, or whoever is elected president, will you set a priority in trying to bring the nation back together? Or what would be your attitude on that?
Well, very much so. Let me pay a compliment to the president, if I may. I think in those days after 9/11, I thought the president did a terrific job. And I really was moved, as well as impressed, by the speech that he gave to the Congress. And I think the hug Tom Daschle gave him at that moment was about as genuine a sense of there being no Democrats, no Republicans. We were all just Americans. That's where we were. That's not where we are today. I regret to say that the president, who called himself a uniter, not a divider, is now presiding over the most divided America in the recent memory of our country. I've never seen such ideological squabbles in the Congress of the United States. I've never seen members of a party locked out of meetings the way they're locked out today. We have to change that. And as president, I am committed to changing that. You know, I don't care if the idea comes from the other side or this side. I think we have to come together and work to change it. And I've done that. Over 20 years in the United States Senate, I've worked with John McCain, who's sitting here. I've worked with other colleagues. I've reached across the aisle. I've tried to find the common ground, because that's what makes us strong as Americans. And if Americans trust me with the presidency, I can pledge to you, we will have the most significant effort, openly, not secret meetings in the White House with special interests, not ideologically driven efforts to push people aside, but a genuine effort to try to restore America's hope and possibilities by bringing people together. And one of the ways we're going to do it is I'm going to work with my friend John McCain to further campaign finance reform so we get these incredible amounts of money out of the system and open it up to average people so America is really represented by the people who make up America.
Mr. President?
My biggest disappointment in Washington is how partisan the town is. I had a record of working with Republicans and Democrats as the governor of Texas, and I was hopeful to be able to do the same thing, and we made good progress early on. The No Child Left Behind Act, incredibly enough, was good work between me and my administration and people like Senator Ted Kennedy. And we worked together with Democrats to relieve the tax burden on the middle class and all who pay taxes in order to make sure this economy continues to grow. But Washington is a tough town, and the way I view it is there's a lot of entrenched special interests there. People who are, you know, on one side of the issue or another, and they spend enormous sums of money, and they convince different senators to tout their way or different congressmen to, you know, talk about their issue, and they dig in. I'll continue in the 4 years to continue to try to work to do so. My opponent said this is a, you know, bitterly divided time. Pretty divided in the 2000 election. So in other words, it's pretty divided during the 1990s as well. We're just in a period, and we've got to work to bring it out. My opponent keeps mentioning John McCain, and I'm glad he did. John McCain is for me for president.
because he understands I have the right view in winning the war on terror, and that my plan will succeed in Iraq, and my opponent has got a plan of retreat and defeat in Iraq.
We've come, gentlemen, to our last question. And it occurred to me as I came to this debate tonight that the three of us share something. All three of us are surrounded by very strong women.
That's right.
We're all married to strong women. Each of us have two daughters that make us very proud. I'd like to ask each of you, what is the most important thing you've learned from these strong women?
To listen to them. To stand up straight and not scowl. I love the strong women around me. I can't tell you how much I love my wife and our daughters. I am, you know, it's really interesting. I tell the people on the campaign trail when I asked Laura to marry me, she said, fine, just so long as I never have to give a speech. I said, okay, you got a deal. Fortunately, she didn't hold me to that deal. And she's out campaigning along with our girls, and she speaks English a lot better than I do. I think people understand what she's saying. But they see a compassionate, strong, great first lady in Laura Bush. I can't tell you how lucky I am when I met her in the backyard of Joe and Jan O'Neill in Midland, Texas. It's the classic backyard barbecue. O'Neill said, come on over. I think you'll find somebody who might interest you. So I said, all right, bopped over there. There's only four of us there. And not only did she interest me, I guess you could say it was love at first sight.
Senator Kerry.
Well, I guess the president and you and I are three examples of lucky people who married up.
Right.
And some would say maybe me more so than others. But I can take it. Can I say, if I could just say a word about a woman that you didn't ask about, but my mom passed away a couple of years ago, and just before I was deciding to run, and she was in the hospital, and I went in to talk to her and tell her what I was thinking of doing. And she looked at me from her hospital bed, and she just looked at me, and she said, remember, integrity, integrity, integrity. Those are the three words that she left me with. And my daughters and my wife are people who just are filled with that sense of what's right, what's wrong. They also kick me around. They keep me honest. They don't let me get away with anything. I can sometimes take myself too seriously. They surely don't let me do that. And I'm blessed, as I think the president is blessed. As I said last time, I've watched him with the first lady, who I admire a great deal, and his daughters. He's a great father. And I think we're both very lucky.
Well, gentlemen, that brings us to the closing statements. Senator Kerry, I believe you're first.
My fellow Americans, as you heard from Bob Schieffer a moment ago, America is being tested by division more than ever. We need to be united as a country. And like Franklin Roosevelt, I don't care whether an idea is a Republican idea or a Democrat idea. I just care whether it works for America and whether it's going to make us stronger. These are dangerous times. I believe I offer tested, strong leadership that can calm the waters of a troubled world. And I believe that we can together do things that are within the grasp of Americans. We can lift our schools up. We can create jobs that pay more than the jobs we're losing overseas. We can have health care for all Americans. We can further the cause of equality in our nation. Let me just make it clear. I will never allow any country to have a veto over our security. Just as I fought for our country as a young man with the same passion, I will fight to defend this nation that I love. And with faith in God and with conviction in the mission of America,
I believe that we can reach higher. I believe we can do better. I think the greatest possibilities of our country, our dreams and our hopes, are out there just waiting for us to grab onto them. And I ask you to embark on that journey with me. I ask you for your trust. I ask you for your help. I ask you to allow me the privilege of leading this great nation of ours, of helping us to be stronger here at home and to be respected again in the world, and most of all, to be safer forever. Thank you, good night, and God bless the United States of America.
Mr. President.
In the Oval Office, there's a painting by a friend of Laura and mine named by Tom Lee. It's a West Texas painting, a painting of a mountain scene, and he said this about it. He said, Sarah and I live on the east side of the mountain. It's the sunrise side, not the sunset side. It's the side to see the day that is coming, not to see the day that is gone. I love the optimism in that painting because that's how I feel about America. And we've been through a lot together during the last 3¾ years. We've come through a recession, a stock market decline, an attack on our country. And yet, because of the hard work of the American people and good policies, this economy is growing. Over the next 4 years, we'll make sure the economy continues to grow. We reformed our school system, and now there's an achievement gap in America that's beginning to close. Over the next 4 years, we'll continue to insist on excellence in every classroom in America so that our children have a chance to realize the great promise of America. Over the next 4 years, we'll continue to work to make sure health care is available and affordable. Over the next 4 years, we'll continue to rally the armies of compassion to help heal the hurt that exists in some of our country's neighborhoods. I'm optimistic that we'll win the war on terror, but I understand it requires firm resolve and clear purpose. We must never waver in the face of this enemy, that these ideologues of hate. And as we pursue the enemy wherever it exists, we'll also spread freedom and liberty. We've got great faith in the ability of liberty to transform societies, to convert a hostile world to a peaceful world. My hope for America is a prosperous America, a hopeful America, and a safer world. I want to thank you for listening tonight. I'm asking for your vote. God bless you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator Kerry. Well, that brings these debates to a close, but the campaign goes on. I want to wish both of you the very best of luck between now and Election Day. That's it for us. From Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona, I'm Bob Schieffer, CBS News. Good night.
All right, and so concludes the third and final presidential debate. John Kerry looking very presidential. And George Bush coming off, I think, as very whiny, a bit petulant, and certainly extremely evasive. Now, Janine, we're going to bring in Mike Malloy of the Mike Malloy Show at Air America. And do we have him?
Yes.
Mike Malloy, I got a question for you. This is Janine Garofalo.
Yeah, let her rip.
Is freedom on the march?
I'd like somebody to tell George Bush that Chiron, the company that produced the tainted flu vaccine, is not a British company. It's an American company based in California that was outsourced, that was sent to Liverpool, and the British government refused and sought backup once they found out that it was tainted. But for Bush to stand there and say it's an English company, Jesus, can't somebody tell him it's an American company?
Well, you know what I also thought was really interesting about that too, Mike, is that he went on and said, we're working with Canada to get flu vaccines.
Right.
Wasn't it George Bush who said, wait, do we have that sound on that? Let's hear the sound of George Bush.
My worry is that, you know, it looks like it's from Canada and it might be from a third world.
Ooh.
Well, does that mean that we cannot touch the flu vaccine supply?
Don't touch it. Don't touch it.
Now, we also have to address this, because this was George Bush's first and probably most prominent lie. And it had to do when John Kerry said that very shortly after saying Osama bin Laden can run, but he can't hide, George Bush went on to say about 6 months later, when it became clear that he dropped the ball at Tora Bora and didn't get Osama bin Laden, that he no longer cared about him. Let's hear this audio.
So I don't know where he is. Nor do, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him, to be honest with you.
I mean, Mike, it's astonishing, this guy's capacity to lie.
Well, it's true. And he went on to say, again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not concerned about him. My God. Well, then why are we in at war in two countries?
Well, he was being honest, Mike. That's like sometimes when George W. Bush is being honest. Just like when he said the war on terrorism can't be won. He has unguarded moments where he tells you the truth. And that calm, easy way he said, I'm not that concerned about him, I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, Mike, well. Janine, we have Governor Jeanne Shaheen on the phone. And Governor Shaheen?
Yes.
It's Sam Cedar, Mike Malloy, and Janine Garofalo here. Tell us, what was your reaction? What was your sense of the debate tonight?
Well, I'm here in Fort Myers, Florida, with a crowd of Kerry supporters, and we were very excited about how John Kerry performed tonight in this third debate. He was presidential. We saw the strength and character that we need in a commander-in-chief, and he made it very clear that he'd be a president who would fight for the middle class, that he understands the struggles that people are facing. And there were a number of times where people in this debate watch party that I was in hollered out when George Bush was refusing to acknowledge the problems that middle class families are facing. You know, they just, it's very clear that he doesn't get the struggles that people are feeling, the problems they've got with paying for health care, with jobs that don't give them the wages they need to live on, with salaries that have gone down, and that John Kerry understands that. And
you know, Governor Shaheen, I have to say that I was really struck in this debate how evasive George Bush was. I mean, it's ironic because he's been saying that John Kerry has been running from his record, whereas I felt that George Bush was incredibly evasive tonight. Even, I mean, not only every time he was asked about jobs, he would talk about education. He at one point said that the No Child Left Behind Act is really a job program. Now, I don't know if he's advocating to get rid of child labor laws, or if he just can't admit the fact that this guy has a worse record on jobs since Herbert Hoover.
Absolutely. And you know, what I thought was interesting is that at one point he said, you can't solve problems unless you diagnose the problems. Well, he ought to practice what he preaches, because he's refusing to acknowledge the difficulties that America is facing. And, you know, until we get a president who understands those problems, we can't address them. And he clearly overreached on No Child Left Behind. You know, while he's talking about the successes of that legislation, he's cut after-school programs, as John Kerry pointed out. He's cut programs for quality child care. He has not provided help to families who are looking to send their young people on to college. And he has not funded the program as he promised he would. So, you know, it reminded me of George Orwell's 1984. You know, he said one thing and he's done another.
Well, you know, Governor Shaheen, Mike Malloy here. Tonight, expanding on what you said about Mr. Bush not seeming to understand what real Americans are facing out here, it reminded me of his dad's price scanner moment. If you remember, I guess it was during the campaign between Herbert Walker Bush and Clinton.
I think it was Dukakis, right? Or was it Clinton?
Maybe it was Clinton.
Yeah, whichever one it was. But they, at a photo op, he was in a supermarket, and they were scanning products, and George Herbert Walker Bush was amazed at the price scanner. That such a thing had come from the future, and here it was in America. Well, I got the impression tonight that this president had his price scanner moment. He has no idea, as Governor Shaheen pointed out, what middle-class Americans are facing.
Actually, Mike Malloy and Governor Shaheen, and this is Janine Garofalo, I think actually your guys are giving him too much credit to say he doesn't understand. That's not necessarily true. He understands it. There is a type of person who has more empathy than another. And I believe that the Bush family, and if you want to add a little psychoanalysis to it, is the type of a family, like very powerful families, and one could argue the Kennedys at times suffered from this, do not empathize with the middle class and the working class. But it's not that they don't understand it.
Yeah.
That's not who they serve.
So another family might be the Sopranos.
Yeah. Well, no, the Sopranos are far more likable, Mike Malloy.
Governor Shaheen, at one point, when Bob Schieffer asked the president again, his golfing buddy, about jobs at another juncture, President Bush once again avoided dealing with the question by saying, we pay for you to go to community college, when he was referring to outsourcing jobs. But isn't the problem that a lot of these outsourced jobs are actually jobs that college-educated and well-educated people have had? I mean, these are high-tech jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're absolutely right. And as John Kerry pointed out, every budget that this president has sent to Congress has reduced funding for job training programs. And I think, Jean Ann, that you're absolutely right, that what we've seen is that George Bush refuses to admit any of those mistakes, and he really is not fighting for average Americans. He's fighting for those people who he wants to extend the tax cut for, those special interests, those people who are making over $200,000 a year. That's where he's put his energy and his effort.
You know, I realize this debate or this Q&A session tonight was primarily focused on domestic issues and most of those economic. But once again, the Bush, I'm so tired of the lies. Bush categorically stated that John Kerry had a global test that would determine whether or not Kerry would defend this country. I'm so sick of that. I don't know why Bob Schieffer or Wolf Blitzer or somebody doesn't step out and say, look, that's already been settled. He didn't make a statement about a global test. That's the part I think that irked me the most tonight.
Well, and I think John Kerry did an excellent job of coming right back and saying, that's not what I said. And you have to ask yourself, why is George Bush spending so much of the debates and so much of this campaign attacking John Kerry? And the answer is very clear, because he doesn't want to defend his record, because he doesn't have proposals and answers for how we address the challenges that Americans are facing in these next 4 years, and he doesn't want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
What George Bush offers is more of the same. What John Kerry offers is a new direction and hope for the middle class.
All right, Governor Shaheen, I know you have to go. Thank you very much. I think you're right. John Kerry was basically pulling George Bush out of his fantasy world, and I think, you know, his only response to that is to talk about anything other than what has been asked. Now, we have Jack Hitt on the phone. Jack, are you with us?
Hi, Sam. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. You're here with Mike Malloy, of course, and Janine and I. And I just want to tell our bloggers, Fox has a poll up. It is time to go and slam Fox. The Fox viewers must understand that they can live in the bubble that George Bush is living in only for so long. But Jack, what was your feeling about the debate tonight?
Well, I was stunned by how on every substantive issue Bush would bring it back to either the high cost of litigation or the No Child Left Behind Act is the answer. If the issue was health care, somehow No Child Left Behind was the answer.
Well, because they were teaching future doctors.
I mean, he really only defended the few things that he's passed in the last few years, and really did not construct a world outside of his, you know, of his handful of bills. And you know, Kerry seemed to be describing a much larger place. I mean, he was very, you know, facile and very comfortable on almost any subject. It seemed like Bush seemed most comfortable when he's talking about his wife and when he was talking about his faith.
Well, it's funny because even when he got into that last thing, again, he was elusive and evasive. I mean, his final statement was, I have a painting, and that painting is about the sunset and the sunrise. Don't look back on my record. Only look towards the future. I mean, Mike, have you seen anything ever like that before in your life?
Look, I had the feeling all during the last 90 minutes there was something preternaturally calm about Bush, as if he had gotten a little extra Ritalin before he came on stage or something. I can't figure out the
I think you're right.
The painting thing either. I you know, it's just more gibberish. But it, you know, forget the microphone in his ear or the earpiece or the thing strapped to his back. This guy was on heavy sedating drugs tonight. I mean, that's the impression I got.
That's what the box on his back is. It's a Ritalin drip that goes through to the spinal cord. That's why he blinks. Every time he blinks like that, he's getting
a remote control. Jack,
a drip of Ritalin.
Jack, do you think that's possible? Do you think it's actually possible that he has a unit on his body that is feeding him Ritalin?
No, it could be something medical, but you know, it's not. You know, I've been actually checking with doctors. Because if you looked at Salon today, they had a picture of him in a T-shirt in his truck.
In his truck. There it was.
And it also has the funny box-like shape in the T-shirt.
Maybe it's something, I don't know, like a fin growing out of his back.
He skipped his medical exam this year.
That's right. And I really think that there has got to be some very important reason why he did that.
There's a chance that it might be medical. I mean, but I've been asking doctors, and none of them, everyone says the back is the worst place to put any kind of sort of, if it were a pain relief pump or something like that, that would be the worst place because there's all these muscles that keep intersecting back there. It would, you know, have a chance of falling.
If you're not a shapeshifter.
Hey, this part of the conversation is creeping me out, guys. Can we go on?
All right, yeah, let's talk about this because I think what really, you know, I mean, Jack, I want to get your sense of this because what really is clear to me is that in watching the debate tonight, I think John Kerry and his advisors knew he only had to basically wrap up one thing. That was just show one more time to the American people that he is presidential. And when he is standing up there with George Bush, I mean, for a second, let's just look at this from both a visual and just from a visceral sense. John Kerry is up there. He feels presidential. He's in control. He's not stuttering. He's not stepping on Bob Schieffer. He's not trying to be evasive. He's addressing everything as it's brought to him. He's laying out his positions. He's answering the questions. George Bush is over there accusing John Kerry of one thing at one moment, not answering Bob Schieffer's direct questions at another moment, being evasive, answering the question, like you said, he only had three answers. One was No Child Left Behind, the other was Too Many Lawsuits, and the third was, he's a liberal from Massachusetts.
You know, the truth is, if you've seen the other two debates from beginning to end, as we all have, this one was really just boring, I thought. I could answer almost every question either one of them said. Mm-hmm. You know, I knew what the answer was before they even started. But and the other thing is that there was an interesting piece in the Times today about how people just check into these debates for like 5 or 6 minutes, like people are just cruising by, and that's why both of them just kept repeating the same things over and over and have repeated them. And I think to that extent, yeah, I mean Kerry wins because his repetition has just been, you know, I have a plan. He outlines the plan. He does sort of, every time Bush says something, he does answer it pretty well, you know, although I thought tonight he dropped the ball a couple of times. Well, like when Bush said that, you know, the tax cut has benefited the middle class more than anyone else, I mean, that was a nice slow ball coming over the home plate.
That's an outright lie, and I also would have wished that John Kerry, when George Bush said that we are getting our vaccine from Canada,
right.
John Kerry should have come back and said, well, wait a second. Just a couple of days ago, you said that drugs coming from Canada could be coming from third world countries. Which is it, Mr. President? Can we get low-cost prescription drugs from Canada, or is it coming from third world countries? Why are you protecting your buddies in these corporate drug companies?
Well, I also wonder why Schieffer didn't follow up or somebody say something when the flu vaccine question came up, and we've already established that Chiron is an American company. It's not an English company, like Bush misstated. But why... When Bush immediately went to this damnable litigation lawsuit thing and tried to link it to the fact that flu vaccine supplies have been contaminated because of poor quality control. What the hell is that? Does anybody know what the connection is there?
No,
there is none, obviously.
He does this a lot, which is that when he has any question where he doesn't really quite know how to answer it, he just goes to the nearest, you know, familiar ground. And in this case, it was amazing how quickly it went from flu vaccine to there's too much litigation in the marketplace.
Yeah. I could tell you why Bob Schieffer didn't say anything about it.
Well, tell us.
Oh, that's golf.
It's his golf buddy. That's why.
That's right.
I mean, I Bob Schieffer asked some of the most ludicrous questions in the world. The last question, of course, was a complete waste. If you had checked out of the debate 10 minutes early, you wouldn't have missed anything, except for George Bush's opportunity to say this time in regards to a painting, that, hey, don't look at my record. Don't look at what I haven't done over the past 4 years. Listen again to the lies I'm telling you I'm going to do in the next four.
But, you guys, you missed the answer to the backdoor draft. The armies of compassion. We have not once touched upon the answer to the backdoor draft. High school students, you may exhale, because the armies of compassion will be going to Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, and the Philippines, not to mention we're going back into Vietnam, Sam, Mike,
and Jack. Well, that would be the compassionate thing to do.
So we're going to try the domino thing again.
Wasn't it the armies of the night? I don't know. The armies of compassion. No, never mind.
No, the armies of the night is something else.
Oh, that's right.
Janine, you're living back in the buggy and horse.
Not buggy and horse. Now you're putting the horse, you know, the cart behind the horse.
Don't lock the barn when the door has closed on the horse's tail or something. Yeah.
What was the pay-go?
Pay-go. I'll tell you what pay-go is, Jack Hitt. I'll tell you what pay-go. Pay-go is you pay, and the liberal senators from Massachusetts go and spend it. That's what pay-go is, man. Because I'm talking about vehicles.
Yeah,
I'm talking about vehicles and moolahs.
And I'll tell you, there was a couple. Kerry had a couple of really good lines, though. I thought. One, he called Bush's Social Security plan a disaster, which it is, and it's actually more accurately a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, we have all seen. Listen, I have been putting money into my pension plan for the past 10 years, and it's exactly where it started.
Yeah.
And you know, thank God there's Social Security there. Mm-hmm. The whole point is, this is an insurance plan. This is a safety net. And if you put it into the market, you're doing one thing. You're basically providing a safety net for the stockbrokers. You're essentially saying, here's a whole new bunch of money that's going to help the stockbrokers, but won't necessarily be there for you down the road.
Well, the whole idea of privatizing 1% of Social Security contributions, much less 100% of it, is an absolute outrage. This is one of the reasons healthcare costs are so high, because there's a corporate structure in healthcare. There are stockholders, shareholders that need to be paid off. There's P&L statements that need to be balanced. There's amortization of huge buildings where these companies are housed. This had nothing to do with healthcare. And the idea of privatizing Social Security and sucking off 15, 20, 25% for broker's fees, oh, please, give me a break. Give me a break. And his, you know, my favorite was his claim that our healthcare system was the envy of the world. That's not true. Our catastrophic medical delivery system is the envy of the world. I mean, people come to the Cleveland Clinic from all over the country just to have the heart surgery. That I agree with, but that's not what he said. Our healthcare system, I think, is looked at by a lot of the civilized world as being a train wreck.
In fact, we're right out there with countries that are not industrialized.
Right.
We have a high infant mortality rate. We have more and more children that are uninsured. We have, and I was just listening to these statistics, that actually cholera's up, dysentery's up, all these kind of third world country problems.
Well, we rank, I believe the last number I saw, we rank 11th or 12th in overall health care or the health of this country, figuring everything in, infant mortality, life expectancy, rates of disease, yada, yada. We're like 12th on the planet. Now, that just seems a little odd. It surprised me, but it came from a reputable organization who released that. And the other thing that irritated me tonight, and I don't mean to jump on anybody's religion, but I get awfully tired of hearing these religious questions. Bush saying that he just feels people praying for him and it gives him calmness in the storm. You know, what is that?
It's anti-intellectual crap for Pavlov's dopes.
It is
such a pre-modern flat earth society load of shite that I actually, it makes me sick. And I want to talk about, speaking of religion, because what's the hand-in-hand issue? Guns. Now, the NRA today, Wayne LaPierre, our friend Wayne LaPierre, is going to support George W. Bush, as is the NRA, and they're going to dump $20 million in 15 key states over the next couple weeks. What do you think, Mike and Jack, how that's going to affect the election?
Oh, it's going to have a profound effect.
Yeah.
It really is. Just like it did in West Virginia and Tennessee. When Gore got defeated, I was in Tennessee 2 weeks before the election when the NRA had passed out handbills saying Gore's going to come personally and take your guns. The NRA is going to do it again. You know, for a neo-Nazi organization whose membership is declining, who's just about bankrupt, these people have way too much power.
Now,
You know, it may have cost Gore West Virginia. A lot of people say the gun issue, you know, lost him West Virginia. But I'm not sure that's going to happen this year. I mean, even though the NRA is going to pour $20 million into this, you know, Kerry has answered that every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he does. He is a hunter. And he, I thought tonight that was one of the questions he nailed really well.
Yeah, he made a real point of saying that.
And he turned that right into law enforcement, you know, when they walk into a crack zone, you know, have to face an AK-47.
Now, Jack,
and there was no answer from the other side.
Jack, I also thought, which was really an interesting point, was when, okay, we've got Arianna Huffington on the phone. Arianna, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Now, I was just saying that I thought John Kerry did one of the things that he did quite well is when George Bush talked about fiscal responsibility, John Kerry got off a pretty good line, which obviously was probably pre-written, but it was served up to him. And John Kerry said, when you talk about fiscal responsibility, it's like Tony Soprano talking to me about law and order.
Exactly. In fact, I'm here with wonderful students at Wesleyan College in Bloomington, Illinois, and I watched the debate with them, and the Tony Soprano line got one of the biggest laughs, and the other line that they really loved was the John Kerry line on the assault weapons ban and the president's sort of hypocritical comment that he didn't really push it because Tom DeLay and Hastert told them that they didn't have the votes. And I thought Kerry came across great there. So the use of humor and the use of challenging his hypocrisy on this issue were very well received here. And in fact, here I'm going to pass you on to one of the students so you can ask him and get the new generation's view of the debate.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello, new generation?
Hi, is this Janine?
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you, young person?
Good. My name's Ryan. I really liked you in The Truth About Cats and Dogs.
Was that made before you were born?
No.
What year were you born?
1983.
Well, then you will love this. The armies of compassion have been unleashed, so don't worry about the draft.
All right. Thank you very much.
I have a question for our young guest. This is Mike Malloy, young guest. Did you notice that there was not one single question to either candidate by Mr. Schieffer regarding environmental degradation, which really and truly undergirds just about every other question that did come up, should have come up. Did that bother you as somebody who's going to inherit a deeply flawed and polluted planet?
Actually, yeah, it really did. We actually talked about that right after the debate, and myself being a biology major, I'm really aware of the environment and what the Bush administration has been doing to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that has really been bothering me, and I am kind of, you know, outraged that there wasn't any talk about that. I'm glad there was a question raised in the previous debate, but in this one there was none. And
Ryan, I got to ask you a question.
Sure.
You're a biologist. You're a biology major.
Right.
Now, does it bother you that the president of the United States doesn't believe in science?
Yeah, actually. It does, and a lot, you know, his, you know, Christian coalition and everything, that's really bothering me. Stem cell research, you can really ask any biology professor that you want, and they'll tell you that this administration has been horrible in not following science and, you know, not putting money towards those things. Bush will talk about how he's given money to hydrogen, you know, fuel cells and stuff like that, but it's not enough at all.
Jack, do you want to ask a question of the new generation?
Well, I was just going to ask if doesn't Ryan think it's only fair, as Governor Bush said when he was governor, that we should teach creationism alongside evolution in all of our schools?
Mm-hmm.
No, not really. I think that's a place for you know, religious institutions to teach that.
Well, the other thing, Ryan, isn't it true if you teach the talking snake theory of creation, which that to me is creationism, then you eliminate not just biology, but you eliminate paleontology, you eliminate astrophysics
and carbon dating.
Everything is gone if you toss out
The theories of natural selection, evolutionary theory, everything is gone. And I wish somebody would explain to George Bush the idea that bacteria and viruses mutate. That's called evolution in order to avoid the death sentence of an antibiotic. And it happens right in front of a lab technician's eyes. Why don't they understand that evolution occurs right in front of their eyes?
Wait, they just put me on speakerphone. What am I...
Oh, all right. Well, Ryan, I guess the point is that here's the bottom line, Ryan. Without science, you got a much better chance of getting good grades.
Thank you. Well,
and Mike Malloy asked you a great question that you missed entirely while somebody was trying to figure out your speakerphone.
All right, but you know what? We've actually got to wrap this up.
Now we're out of time.
I apologize. There's a couple.
You have a lot of kids here who wanted to speak to you, so let's all give a tremendous.
Hip, hip, hooray! Hip, hip, hooray!
Let's hear it for college students!
Let's hear it for young people!
For the young generation!
Yay!
Go get them! Kick butt!
Get out the vote, people!
We will! Trust me!
All right, so Mike Malloy, you'll be up in just a minute. Jack Hitt, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Janine.
Ariana Huffington, thank you. Young people, thank you.
Thank you, Janine.
And
we will be back tomorrow with Rick Hertzberg of the New Yorker Magazine, Ryan Lizza of the New Republic, Katrina Vandenheuvel of The Nation. Oh, my God, it's unbelievable. And we'll be interviewing...
Peaches!
Are you sick and tired of your bathroom scale dictating your mood? If you're down a pound, great day. But watch out if you're up a pound or two or your clothes get a bit tighter. That is not a good day. If this sounds like you, then I urge you to step off the scale into the Cortislim lifestyle by calling 800-921-BURN. You know Cortislim people. You run into those Cortislim show-offs constantly. You hear how great and physically fit they feel and how they're going shopping for new clothes. Well, Cortislim people have learned that at least part of their weight issues are related to stress and hormones. Cortislim people don't drive themselves nuts because they've learned the balance of exercise, nutrition, diet, and supplementation. If you're ready, step off the scale and into the Cortislim lifestyle.
Call now and get $20 off when you purchase two bottles of Cortislim. $20 off two bottles. That's huge. Call 800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN.
You're listening to 1190 WLIP New York, the home of Air America Radio.
Air America Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley. Final confrontation. John Kerry, George W. Bush met for their final televised debate of the campaign, and they answered questions about health care, taxes, and jobs.
You know, education is how to help the person who lost a job. Education is how to make sure that we've got a workforce that's productive and competitive. You've got four more years, I've got more to do to continue to raise standards, to continue to reward teachers and school districts that are working, to emphasize math and science in the classrooms, to continue to expand Pell Grants, to make sure that people have an opportunity to start their career with a college diploma. And so to the person you talk to, I say, here's some help. Here's some trade adjustment assistance money. For you to go to a community college in your neighborhood, a community college which is providing the skills necessary to fill the jobs of the 21st century. And that's what we'd say to that person.
Senator Kerry.
I want you to notice how the president switched away from jobs and started talking about education principally. Let me come back in one moment to that, but I want to speak for a second, if I can, to what the president said about fiscal responsibility. Being lectured by the president on fiscal responsibility is a little bit like Tony Soprano talking to me about law and order in this country. This president has taken a $5.6 trillion surplus and turned it into deficits as far as the eye can see. Health care costs for the average American have gone up 64%. Tuitions have gone up 35%. Gasoline prices up 30%. Medicare premiums went up 17% a few days ago. Prescription drugs are up 12% a year. But guess what, America? The wages of Americans have gone down. The jobs that are being created in Arizona right now paying about $13,700 less than the jobs that we're losing. And the president just walks on by this problem. The fact is that he's cut job training money. $1 billion was cut. They only added a little bit back this year because it's an election year. They've cut the Pell Grants and the Perkins loans to help kids be able to go to college. They've cut the training money. They've wound up not even extending unemployment benefits and not even extending health care to those people who are unemployed. I'm going to do those things because that's what's right in America.
And one fact check from the debate. Kerry accurately quoted Bush as saying he doesn't think much about Osama bin Laden, isn't all that concerned about him. The president protested, "I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden." But in March 2002, Bush indeed said, "I truly am not that concerned about him. I know he's on the run." He described Osama bin Laden as marginalized, and he said, quote, "I just don't spend that much time on Osama bin Laden." Air America Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley.
Time is almost up. There's only 3 weeks to Election Day. What are you doing to get out the vote in the battleground states? Join New Yorkers for an evening of good food, good music, and good politics as we volunteer to get out the vote in the battleground states. At the Taste of Democracy this October 14th, New York's finest restaurants are bringing their favorite menu items. Artemis recording artist Jeffrey Gaines will bring his acoustic soul, and the Taylor Barton Band with longtime Saturday Night Live band leader G.E. Smith will perform their hip folk pop. But what really matters is that you can volunteer to get out the vote where it counts, in the battleground states. You'll be able to volunteer for swing state phone banks from New York or to get on the bus to travel to a swing state. So on Thursday, October 14th, join us for good food, good music, and good politics. Reserve your tickets now by going to tasteofdemocracy.com. That's tasteofdemocracy.com. Or call 212-523-0180. That's 212-523-0180. All proceeds will support our work and get out the vote in the battleground states.
Why I Love Friday by Jessica LaDay. On weekends, I do what I want to do. It's like
my life starts on Friday. Weekends are me time. I read, I shop, I
spend time with my family, going on adventures with the kids.
Even just working in our garden. And then we reward ourselves with a movie or...
Eat pizza, because it's my favorite food. The end.
Make this weekend even better. Pick up your local newspaper Friday and find Life magazine inside, with great photos, stories, and ideas for the weekend. Visit Life.com for the paper in your area.
For just 45 cents a day, you can have 8 weeks of the Wall Street Journal delivered to your home or office every business day. That's just 45 cents a day for the insights, analysis, and news relevant to the business of your life. Every business day, the Wall Street Journal delivers the top news from every market, industry, and corner of the globe. But because life isn't just business, the Journal's innovative personal journal section translates today's news into the useful information you need to save time and money. From scoring travel discounts to better banking deals, Personal Journal provides practical guidance you can use. Call now and take advantage of the Journal's special introductory offer. Save 55% off the Journal's newsstand price when you order an 8-week subscription for just 45 cents a day. This offer is available for a limited time to new subscribers in the continental U.S. Don't miss out. Call 800-889-1001. That's 800-889-1001 for the Wall Street Journal.
The Air America phones are ringing off the hook.
I call it the pachyderm limbo. How low can this elephant go?
Everyone's calling Air America Radio.
The greedy, selfish, self-oriented do anything to win and put that lying Bush administration in office. They didn't even know that he was a college cheerleader.
866-303-AAR0. Call and let it rip.
These Republicans have taken such an ass in my pocket and my body. I cannot breathe.
Let's get this abbreviated Malloy show on the pro on the road here. Man, another hour and a half. I'll tell you, I was just on with Janine and Sam on Majority Report, and I kind of agree with the comment New York Times' Jack Hitt made that tonight's was boring. I'm sorry it was. Yeah, I think my guy said all the right things, and yeah, I think their guy said the usual gibberish that he usually says. But as Jack Hitt said, it was very, easy to answer the questions before the candidates did, the questions that Bob Schieffer asked. I see no reason why anybody with a half a brain would consider George Bush's performance in any or all of these three Q&A sessions as being anything other than ill-informed, hostile, aggressive, belligerent. The man should not be president, and 3 weeks from now he technically will not be. I mean, of course he is until January 21st, but technically speaking, he'll begin, loading up the U-Haul and getting the hell out of Washington, D.C., we hope, right? As far as anything memorable that was said tonight, I can't think of anything. Some of the questions were just half-wit questions. I thought that Schieffer played it very safe, since his family is very closely connected to the Bush crime organization. I thought Bob Schieffer was, I'm not going to say he was fair and balanced or that he asked questions that Americans desperately need to know. I'm just saying that I don't think he revealed to an uninformed passerby that he has a close connection with his brother and himself with the Bush crime family. I think his brother is was appointed ambassador by George W. Bush to some country because the brother is a heavy contributor to the Bush crime family, as is the Bin Laden family, as is the Saudi royal family. So I don't know. I don't know if I even want to talk about it. Do any of y'all want to talk about it tonight? I just don't know that it's worth getting into. You know? Yawn. I mean, if you want to, the phone number here is 866-303-2270, but what's to discuss? Now, by tomorrow evening, I'm sure Kathy will pull some of the more half-witted sound bites that from out of Bush's mouth, and we can all guffaw and chuckle and hoot and holler and knee-slap over him. But tonight, I don't know. Now, are we having phone problems tonight? We're not? Okay. Then I think what we should do is just find out where you all are. Okay, let's talk with Pat, who's calling in from Dayton, Ohio. Pat, welcome to the program.
How we doing?
Hey, doing fine, Pat. How are you?
Not too bad. You know who I think won tonight?
Ooh.
Bob Schieffer.
Well, okay.
Well, I mean, when you watch the debates, you could tell, like the previous debaters, the three previous ones, the moderators just let them kind of go back and forth too much. He would seem to cut them off, like, question, response.
Yeah, you're right. He wasn't the least bit intimidated by the office of the presidency. I don't see how anybody could be intimidated by Bush, but some people carry a little bit of intimidation for the office of the presidency, not Schieffer.
No, and he very much he knew what questions he wanted asked. He knew how much time he had to get those asked in, and plus the surprise of letting them have the response time when he chose. I think kept them on their toes.
That question about the wives, though, I just kind of half listening. I think at that point I got up to use the facilities here at the Molloy studio.
That was a little too touchy feely at the end.
Oh my God!
You know, and when I watched the beginning of the debate, I think Kerry had too many opportunities. He should have come out and attacked. I mean, especially, hey, we need to bring the vaccine in from Canada.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, wait a minute. I thought drugs from Canada were really third world drugs filled with little worms and viruses and bugs and crawly things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Kerry had his opportunities to attack it in the beginning, and I thought, well, maybe he'll get his attacks in at the end so it'll stick.
Yeah.
And then we end up with that touchy-feely, how are your wives question.
Don't you just want to scream when they do that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Thanks, Pat. I appreciate you checking in, pal. You have a nice evening. I mentioned this on the last half hour before the top of the break hour that Sam and Janine stole from me. But when Bush right away, the question about the flu vaccine, the fact that 50 million doses heading for this country are not coming now, and we talked about this the other night on this program, but The thing that irritated me the most, and it was so true to form, was Bush right away shows his abysmal ignorance. Chiron, the company that produces this vaccine, is not a British company. It's an American company, for God's sake. It's based in California. It just outsourced one of its production facilities to Liverpool, England. So Bush right away said, we rely on these English companies. And the implication was because litigation for pharmaceutical companies is such an expense in this country, and lawsuits, and God, if somebody gets a shot and has a reaction, they're going to win $40 million in a car. You know, that kind of crap. But the whole thing falls apart. It's fun to listen to this moron sometimes when he talks about how the entire structure of the universe will fall and collapse into a huge black hole, if he believed in such a thing, unless we had litigation reform. The whole thing collapses when he doesn't even know that it's an American company. He doesn't even know that. He calls it an English company or British, whatever the hell he called it. And right then, I just thought, oh, geez, it's going to be one of those nights. Oh, my God. All right, let's see what you got to say. We'll do this for a while. And I want to talk about something important a little bit later tonight, and that's the lawsuit that Bill O'Reilly has had filed against him. What I'm thinking about doing seriously is quoting from some of the plaintiffs' complaint here. I don't know how far we can go before they pull the plug on the program if I do start quoting, but I'll try to. That's kind of like what I feel like doing tonight. I'm just I don't know what to say about these stupid debates. But we'll take a few calls. Kurt is calling from Portland, Oregon. Kurt, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Kurt.
I'm so angry with what George Bush said tonight. I'm just shaking. I'm just furious. When he was asked to respond to the unemployment job issue in America,
yeah,
he diverted and said, I want to give people the chance to go to a community college and get educated. I have been in college for 9 years. I have 3 degrees. I have been looking for a job for over a year. I don't qualify for unemployment. I have rent for one more month. What in the world am I supposed to do? What does George Bush want to do? Send me to community college?
Yeah, well, that's what it sounded like. That's what it sounded like. I understand your outrage. I understand.
But does he? Does he or anybody in his administration or anybody out there that wants to support him? I gave up everything I had to go to college so I could get a job. And there are no jobs.
I think Janine kind of touched on this earlier tonight. He does understand. He just doesn't care.
I had an interview for a job that required a high school education. That's the only interview I can even get.
Yeah.
It pays less than a job I quit 8 years ago.
Oh, God.
What is sending people to college to get an education going to do?
Well, nothing.
What good is it to have a country full of educated people and they can't even get an interview at Starbucks?
Well, I understand your outrage because rather than address the issue, rather than do something about it, Bush refuses to answer the question. He refuses to take action. And he makes it sound like there is no problem, that all guys like you have to do with a degree or two beyond a secondary education is just go to community college, get a degree in nutrition, and go to work in a school cafeteria someplace, I guess.
He's going to have is the most highly educated homeless population in the world.
Well, no, because Kerry,
I'm a month away from that, Mike.
Okay.
I don't have family.
Yeah.
Well, I don't apply for any government handouts, and I don't want them. I just want to go to work.
Yeah, I hear you.
I just want to go to work.
Wouldn't it be horrible if you had to move to India?
Oh, don't even get me started.
I know. I'm sorry.
Mike, you're doing great. You give him some hell.
Kurt, I'm really sorry about the situation you're facing. I hope it clears up. I know that sounds just so trite, and I don't know how to respond without sounding trite. But thanks for calling in. I appreciate you calling. I appreciate what you're going through. Take care, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
Call us again. We'll be right back. Quick break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio. Baby, come on. Oh.
Attention, Single Air America listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Air America because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Air America listeners and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you say, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to actually meet the other people who listen to Air America, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. DemocraticMatch.com is completely free for a limited time, so what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Are you sick and tired of your bathroom scale dictating your mood? If you're down a pound, great day, but watch out if you're up a pound or two or your clothes are a bit tighter. That is not a good day. If this sounds like you, then step off the scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle by calling 800-921-BURN. You know CortiSlim people. You run into those CortiSlim show-offs constantly. You hear how great and physically fit they feel and how they're going shopping for new clothes. Well, CortiSlim people have learned that at least part of their weight issues are related to stress and hormones. CortiSlim people don't drive themselves nuts because they've learned the balance of exercise, nutrition, diet, and supplementation. If you're ready, step off the scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle. Call now and get $20 off when you purchase 2 bottles of CortiSlim. $20 off 2 bottles. That's huge. Call 800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN.
I love TV. That's right. I admit it, which is why I don't just watch TV. I watch DTV, digital television from Time Warner Cable. DTV gives you access to more than 250 channels, including premium networks like the Movie Channel and Showtime. Of course, Showtime isn't just Showtime. It's 8 different channels of movies and original series like The L Word and Huff. I know, I'm hooked. And with Time Warner Cable's on-demand services, you can pause, rewind, and fast-forward all with your DTV remote. You just can't do that with satellite. Right now, you can have DTV installed for only $9.95. Just call 1-800-OK-CABLE. And when you order Showtime or the Movie Channel, you get the first month free, plus a 30-day free trial of Showtime On Demand or the Movie Channel On Demand. What's not to love? Get DTV. Call 1-800-OK-CABLE.
Offer expires 10/31/04. Available to new Time Warner Cable residential customers. Premiums will be billed at regular rates as of the second month. Other restrictions apply. Call 1-800-OK-CABLE.
Hi, this is Al Franken, the host of The Al Franken Show on Air America Radio. For the last 6 months, we've been doing 3 hours a day of cutting-edge radio programming. We've had guests like Bill Clinton, John Kerry, and Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, Pekka, it knows no bigotry.
We've covered events like the handover of power in Iraq. We've explained difficult concepts like the growing national debt using nothing more than an ordinary slide whistle. Now we're presenting our show in a convenient, easy-to-use, one-hour version every night on Sundance Channel. Finally, you'll be able to see what we're talking about. Right, Strom?
That's right, Yippee! I'm going on TV.
Tune in every night at 11:30 on Sundance Channel for The Al Franken Show. And if you don't get Sundance Channel, go to their website, sundancechannel.com. Al and Sundance Channel. Together again.
Attention smokers, find out how to get 2 free cartons of your preferred brand of cigarettes. That's right, the makers of Smoke Free and 3 are so confident you will finally quit smoking that they'll buy your next 2 cartons for you if you don't quit. Never again will you have smoke-filled clothes, bad breath, or jeopardize the health of your loved ones. Just listen to these ex-smokers.
I've been smoking a carton of cigarettes per week as long as I can remember. The very first day I started the Smoke Free and 3 system, I quit.
This is Shelly, and my cravings have decreased. I'm calmer, less irritable, and I've been smoke-free for a month now.
This system really surprised me on how effectively and quickly it worked.
Smoke Free and 3 is strong against cravings mentally and physically, so you can stop for good. No stress, no jitters, no anxiety, and no more money wasted on cigarettes.
Call now for your trial of Smoke Free and 3 at 1-800-304-1766. Stop smoking in just days, guaranteed. 800-304-1766. If you don't stop, we'll send you $100 to buy your next 2 cartons. Call 1-800-304-1766. That's 1-800-304-1766.
22 past the hour. You know, when I say I found the whole thing boring, I don't mean to come across as some elitist jerk. I just mean that, just that. It was kind of boring. It was very easy to answer the questions Bob Schieffer was asking both of these people. You knew exactly. I think we all know Kerry's positions now, and that's a good thing. And we all know that Manor Monkey is just going to stand there and make these kind of gibberish sounds that translate into broken sentences and things that he's been programmed to say over the past 4 years. So that's what I mean by boring. I don't mean that somehow I'm entitled to more exciting presidential debate. Not at all. In the first place, as we all know, it's not a debate. But as far as anybody having their mind made up as a result of what they saw tonight, maybe so. Certainly, Kerry is much more focused and deliberate and adult where it concerns domestic issues. Just like our caller from Portland just said, you know, he's facing chaos, financial chaos in his life, and Manor Monkey stands there and prattles platitudes that mean nothing. They mean absolutely nothing. Well, you know, unemployment, we're going to send people to community college. You know, first of all, it's a lie. How do you go to community college? Where do I get a grant? You know, where do I get one? Right? Oh, well. I just had the feeling I wanted to break stuff tonight. Dan is calling from North Carolina. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. It's Darren, actually.
Darren. Hey, Darren. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I have a kind of an insider's view on this whole Pell Grant number.
Uh-huh.
You know, I lost my job due to NAFTA, my manufacturing job, and I took the trade adjustment assistance to go to the community college.
Right.
When I first went, like a lot of us did, we got just the straight trade adjustment assistance. Very few of us knew to even apply for a Pell Grant.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't know if we were eligible or what. And that was in about the first 6 or 12 months I was there.
Right.
After that, but you know, Bush mentioned tonight that there, while Kerry mentioned that the amount of money didn't go up, Bush mentioned that the amount of people getting Pell Grants went up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, because more people were out of work and getting this trade adjustment thing.
Right, right. But, and that kind of understanding of the problem is beyond Bush's ability. He doesn't understand that because more people are applying for that particular, for Pell Grants to be used that particular way is a clear indication of the mess the economy's in.
And also, about halfway through my trade adjustment assistance program, you no longer had the option to apply for the Pell Grant, but it was actually mandatory. You could not get trade adjustment assistance unless you applied for a Pell Grant. So the government actually forced you to apply for a Pell Grant,
mm-hmm.
whether you were eligible or not, just so, I'm assuming, that the number of people that got Pell Grants would go up.
Interesting. Interesting. So what's going on in your personal situation now? What did you get out of the community college thing and the Pell Grant?
I'm still unemployed.
God.
I wasn't able to finish because that's another thing with the trade adjustment assistance that a lot of people don't know. You can go for a 2-year degree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but trade adjustment assistance will not pay your health care at all.
Right.
You get no health care, no COBRA, unless you want to pay for it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll only pay for the first 18 months. So you can go for a 2-year degree, but TAA will only pay for 18 months.
So there's either Bush, once again, is uninformed or he's lying, or the people out there who are applying for these, like you, who do have the truth, understand it far better than he does, or all three.
Absolutely. And besides that, I mean, you're talking about factory workers who have worked the same job for decades.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not ready to go. Even if it's community college, they're not ready to go from a factory job into a college environment.
Exactly.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, I hear you. Dan, thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call. All right?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care. And you believe that No Child Left Behind is somehow a jobs program? the this educational vomit pile that is doing nothing about getting our children educated, is doing nothing about improving the conditions in our schools, nothing, and it's not even funded. Bush won't even fund it to the level that he keeps claiming. So No Child Left Behind is now a jobs program? Isn't that what he said? The best way, you know, we're talking about people in the third grade. My God. Why is he so proud of this legislation? Does he not understand what the No Child Left Behind thing really is? It leaves so many children behind. There's nothing good about it. It's a lie. It's false hope. And there's nothing worse than false hope for somebody who would like just a chance. Just give me a chance to better myself and my family and my children. That's all I'm asking for. I don't want your damn handout. Give me a chance. And Bush stands here and dangles this garbage in front of somebody's face. Oh, man. All right, let us take a break here. We'll be right back. This is Air America Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
Santa Claus does not exist, and there's no Easter Bunny. You'll find out when you grow up that Big Bird isn't funny.
Funny.
Life's gonna suck when you grow up, when you grow up, when you grow up. Life's gonna suck when you grow up. It sucks pretty bad right now.
Did you know there's a delicious energy bar that is certified organic? It's called Clif Bar, with the rock climber on the package. Clif Bars are made with whole grains and real fruit, and they don't contain trans fats or hydrogenated oils. Clif Bar, the company, belongs to a growing community of people and companies dedicated to leaving a lighter footprint on the planet. Visit CliffBar.com and learn about this small group of people working to create a better energy bar and a more healthful environment.
In an exclusive mini-documentary on MotherJones.com, former Reagan official Clyde Prestowitz critiques the Bush administration's policies from the perspective of a traditional conservative. Prestowitz points to the record deficit, the restriction of individual rights, and the war in Iraq as the opposite of conservative values. As a result, he says, we're less safe today than we were 3 or 4 years ago. Watch this provocative film at MotherJones.com, the source for exclusive reports and the best of the independent web. Because you need independent news.
Needless to say, I was anxious to be 110 miles offshore and jumping off a boat in the open ocean.
Jim Ray is a marine biologist who has been working with a national marine sanctuary called the Flower Gardens, deep in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Flower Garden banks are a very unique set of reefs. About 55% of the surface area is covered with living coral.
And while his work is not surprising, what might be is who he works for. Shell.
It just gives me a very different view and approach on the environment. Yeah, it has become an old friend.
Protecting this magnificent area is something people like Jim have been doing for over 30 years.
With this kind of protection, it'll probably be there 100 years from now for people to still enjoy.
And while Shell will continue to focus on energy, that will never be its only focus.
As long as I'm still allowed to dive, I'm not too old to climb back on a boat, I'll probably have the opportunity to go back to places like the Flower Gardens.
To find out more, see the Shell report, People, Planet, and Profits at www.shell.com.
I was the biggest skeptic ever. I checked out eHarmony within 2 weeks. I met Amy.
When I met Greg, he exceeded my greatest expectations.
I just knew I was going to fall in love with her right away.
For the first time, I felt like I may have met the person I was going to spend the rest of my life with.
She is this constant reinforcement of who I am and what makes me good and what makes me strong. And just to know that you're completely loved, completely trusted is wonderful.
Looking deeper into what a person is really about was why I chose eHarmony.
Hi, I'm Dr. Neil Clark Warren, founder of eHarmony.com. There's a reason these two soulmates found each other. At eHarmony.com, we match them based on 29 dimensions of compatibility. That's why they have such a deep level of joy and connectedness. And we'd sure like to do that for you. So log on to eHarmony.com and get your free personality profile. Let's get started finding your soulmate today.
I try to teach my children what's important in life. So instead of Fruit Loops cereal, I buy Maltomeal Tutti Frutti's cereal. Maltomeal Tutti Frutti's tastes just as good and has all the same vitamins and minerals, plus more vitamin A and calcium. And we get 50% more cereal for about the same price.
lesson.
I know, it's what's inside that counts.
Look for Malt-O-Meal Tutti Frutti's and over 20 other popular flavors, because Malt-O-Meal means more. Part of a balanced breakfast. Claim based on net weight comparison of 22.5 ounces to 15 ounces. Fruit Loops is a registered trademark of Kellogg Company.
Sudden ups and downs, breathtaking twists and turns. No, it's not a roller coaster, it's the stock market. But Barron's, America's premier financial weekly, can help you make money whichever way the market moves. Now you can get 13 weeks of Barron's plus the valuable guide to building wealth and 4 weeks of Barron's online, all for only $39. This offer is available to new subscribers in the continental U.S. Call now 800-858-5800. That's 800-858-5800 for Barron's.
Hi, I'm Kelly Ripa. You probably know me best as a TV host and actress, but you may not know that my sister was seriously injured in a drunk driving crash. She is one of about 500,000 people who are injured every year because of someone's careless choice to drink and drive. If you've survived a crash, or if you have a loved one who's been injured or killed due to drunk driving, please call MAD. They're here to help, and they're just a phone call away. Call 1-800-GET-MAD or visit mad.org.
The Maturity Report.
See, I keep waiting for that to happen to Cheney, Ashcroft, especially Karl Rove, Karen Hughes, and Epiphany. Let their life pass before their eyes so that they can see how there's a better way to live.
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
Margaret Mead has said, never underestimate the power of a small group of people. The power of a small group of people in this case who are in desperate need of a near-death experience to get them living right.
The Maturity Report on Air America Radio.
Sometimes when you don't measure, you just shuffle kids through. Then you wake up at the high school level and find out that the literacy level of our children are appalling.
Or you wake up in the White House and find the same thing are true.
God. Bush's statement, was it in the first question or the second question, you know, once again, the Osama bin Laden thing, where Kerry mentioned Bush saying that Osama wasn't a problem. And Bush came back, I don't think I ever said I'm not worried about Osama bin Laden. It's kind of one of those, what's the word? Exaggerations. Well, okay, well, here's your exaggeration, too stupid.
So I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him. I'll be honest with you. I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him. I know he is on the run.
I truly am not concerned about him. Why isn't that made into an instant carry commercial? And again, either Bush is stupid or a dry drunk who's on drugs to keep him from just his head exploding, or he thinks we're stupid, or he doesn't understand that time happens, you know, and that memory happens, and that there's a flow. You know, I get the impression sometimes that George really is hung up on the level of a 6 or 7 month old primate, that, whether it's human or gorilla or whatever, who exists totally in the here and now. There's, you know, was and will make me ill, half a gram, and I just am. It's sort of like that. It's like from Brave New World. Remember that little couplet? Where everybody was on drugs, they gave you Soma, remember? And the little couplet was and will, that's past and future, was and will make me ill, half a gram, and I just am. Is that Bush now? Well, yes. Something he said 10 minutes ago, or yesterday, or last week, or a month ago, or 5 years ago, or 20 years ago, doesn't exist, because was and will make me ill. Half a gram, and I just am. Give me some more Soma, only when his case is not Soma. And besides, there is a product called Soma now, but when Huxley wrote about this, there was no such thing as Soma. But I had to, I also, might as well trash this conversation down to Malloy's level. I had the feeling he was on drugs tonight again. Did you notice, you know, what do you give a hyperactive fourth grader? And no offense to you parents who do this, if you do it and you and your pediatrician decided your kid needs Ritalin, okay. But that's what you do, right? You give a hyperactive child speed. And for some reason, the pharmacology of it, the biopharmacology calms the kid down. I've never been able to understand that. When I've taken speed before, it just makes me want to crawl outside my skin and run around in my bones. That's why I don't do it. Haven't done it for 25 years. But anyway, Bush. So they give him something. But I had the impression tonight he was just there was a weird calmness. Was that what passes for calm on him? You know, especially they must have told him, glance over towards Kerry, tilt your chin up, hold the position, stay there, don't move. Okay, we have tested this with focus groups. This is the look that gives you a presidential look. Head tilted up, you know, chin up. And whatever you do, just have. Can you put a half smile on your face? Can he put a half smile? All he can do is smirk. So there was the smirk. And I swear to God, this looked like a trained monkey. I'm sorry. Listen to Malloy. There he goes, attacking the way the president looks. Yeah, that's right. Like a trained damn monkey. But I swear, there are a couple of things that Kerry said. Even Kerry wasn't on his feed tonight either. Feed. He wasn't on his feed. That's what we say here in the South, you know. Do y'all know what that means? On your feed? You know, off your feed means you're vomiting and sick and, you know, diarrhea. On your feed, never mind. Kerry wasn't on his feed tonight because there are a couple of times he could have just, figuratively speaking, metaphorically speaking, gutted Bush and let his entrails spill out on that stage. But he didn't do it. And Bush stands there with his chin up and his little simian nose kind of flaring, those little nostrils flaring. It was just something wondrous to see. And, okay, I'm just gibbering, so... Let's go to Chiffon Breath. Chiffon Breath?
Yes.
In Jersey. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Say it for me.
Hi. Chiffon Breath.
Chiffon Breath.
I love you. You are like the greatest breath of fresh air next to Randy.
Chiffon.
Okay, now I want to touch on a couple of things and then I have my question.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay?
Yeah.
So like you were talking about the No Child's Butt Left Behind.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling that the reason that they're not paying attention to it is because there's a thing within that process that is going to record the child's name so that when the child becomes of age for military service, they're going to have the name on the list.
Yeah, that's true.
And since parents know that, they're going to be following, well, geez, what's my military doing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
They're going to be more aware. Like, you know, it's going to make people want to be more aware of what's going on in government.
Yeah, why? I have a question for you, Chiffon Breath. Why is part of the No Child Left Behind Act a section that says schools cannot prohibit the military from showing up to try to recruit the kiddies? Isn't that interesting? It probably has to do with what you're talking about. They're going to track them.
Mm-hmm.
And the No Child Left Behind guarantees there will be lots of deltas, if you remember Brave New World, since I seem to be hung up on that tonight, a lot of deltas who will just pick up the weapon and be very happy to go kill people who live out on the reservations. And,
that I don't agree with.
No?
Mm-mm.
What?
No, I still believe in the free spirit. And I kind of believe that the reason that they didn't, you know, want to pursue it was because all of a sudden the military said, yeah, that's not a good idea. The other thing is that I think
didn't want to pursue what? That's part of the bill. Part of the bill says the military must be given access to all schools.
But I think the military themselves turned around and said to the Bushekis, that's not a good idea.
Oh,
because
okay.
Then you're going to have too many people looking at what we're doing.
Yeah, right. Too much scrutiny.
Yeah.
Don't scrutinize me. All right. What else you got,
okay,
Chiffon
Breath? The other thing was that I didn't think that it was boring to debate.
You didn't?
I was on a mission.
Yeah.
And my mission was just to write down and look for whenever Bush screwed up.
Yeah.
Or like whenever he lost a step.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I was rewarded. But my big question is, how can Bush support outsourcing and isolationism?
How can Bush walk and chew gum? I mean,
you know, it's like if I'm a business and I'm going to outsource, and my government's not going to have my back,
right?
Because I'm an isolationist government,
right?
Like, what's up with that?
Well, in Bush's case, sometimes he doesn't even know that the companies that have outsourced, like Chiron, the company that makes the flu vaccine.
That was my point.
Right.
Yeah.
He calls it an English or British company. It's not.
Yeah. That's like, I don't get it.
Well, you can't try too hard to get it with this guy, or you'll wind up with your head exploding.
That's it. You know, it spins around a lot. Smoke comes out of my ears.
I hear you.
Okay, I got to go.
All right, Siobhan Breath, thanks for checking in. You have a nice evening. Is that really her name? Siobhan Breath? All right. What do I know? Clinton is calling from Dearborn. He's our bureau chief there, Dearborn, Michigan. Clinton, that's Clint, right?
Yeah, that's what I told her. She put down Clinton.
Well, whatever. Hi, Clint.
I guess it's part of the twilight zone that we're in right now.
We are in a twilight zone. The whole planet is in this twilight zone. Well, you can call me Michael.
Okay, Michael. At first, I want to see how Molly is doing.
Oh, Molly's doing great.
Oh, that's great. I wanted to call about the debate tonight. For Bush's performance, just like you and Janine and Sam talked about earlier, Bush was doing his usual gibberish.
Right.
And his performance kind of reminded me of my sister's cockatiels. You know, say one word or phrase, and that's all they know how to do.
Yeah, I know. And that's all I meant by boring. I mean, I know Kerry's position now.
Mm-hmm.
On just about everything. And Bush doesn't have a position on anything. All he has is little statements, little trite half sentences and unconnected phrases that he pumps out there. So that's what I meant by boring.
Yeah, and this business on the military that your previous caller just talked about, that was kind of interesting, too. I hadn't thought about that, but two of my nieces graduated from high school this year, and they had the little military certificates that they got this year, you know, for doing good in school and stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, God, these guys are here to recruit you.
Now, wait a second. They got military certificates for...
Well, they got some kind of thing. They got like an honor or something, you know, because
yeah.
They did good in school or something.
Yeah.
And it was sponsored by some branch of the military.
Oh, I see. Did they get a little brown shirt with that or an armband?
Well, I wasn't actually there for the ceremony, but I did hear that I think it was like a Marine or something that came to both of the ceremonies and, you know, presented this thing that said that they were outstanding scholastically in school or something like that.
Do you know, I've always had the feeling that that military recruiters are not unlike used car dealers. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or overzealous insurance salespeople. I just don't trust them. I love the military and trust the military for the most part, but military recruiters, to me, are people that could not get a job at Ace Goldstone's corner lot selling used Buicks. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? Yeah. Hey, Clint, there's some music. We got a boogie.
Okay, take care.
Thanks for checking in, pal. And listen, send your emails to me to MikeDMalloy@AOL.com, not to Mike@MikeMalloy.com, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, talk to you later.
Thick as a brick.
There is a terrible affliction plaguing Americans. It's our number one emotional problem, the failure of relationships, dating, and marriage. At TheraDate.com, we are a group of licensed and certified mental health professionals who have decided to do something about it. A revolutionary matching and compatibility system originally available only for use by therapists is now available to the general public. TheraDate.com is not a casual dating site. It doesn't use personality profiles or other pop psychology gimmicks. It's a matching system utilizing over 80 years of psychological research. We ask questions the way therapists do to get to know their patients. We ask the questions that truly determine who is the best match for you. Theradate.com is now accepting free registration for a limited time. Log on to Theradate.com to try Theradate's unique matching system for free. If you are tired of being alone and truly want to bond with someone for life, log on to Theradate.com. That's www.theradate.com. For a limited time, it's free to register for our totally unique service.
Hi, this is Al Franken, the host of the Al Franken Show on Air America Radio. For the last 6 months, we've been doing 3 hours a day of cutting-edge radio programming. We've had guests like Bill Clinton, John Kerry, and Strom Thurmond.
Yeah, Pekka, it knows no bigotry.
We've covered events like the handover of power in Iraq. We've explained difficult concepts like the growing national debt using nothing more than an ordinary slide whistle. Now we're presenting our show in a convenient, easy-to-use, one-hour version every night on Sundance Channel. Finally, you'll be able to see what we're talking about. Right, Strom?
That's right, Yippee! I'm going on TV.
Tune in every night at 11:30 on Sundance Channel for the Al Franken Show. And if you don't get Sundance Channel, go to their website, sundancechannel.com. Al and Sundance Channel. Together again.
Are you sick and tired of your bathroom scale dictating your mood? If you're down a pound, great day, but watch out if you're up a pound or two or your clothes are a bit tighter. That is not a good day. If this sounds like you, then step off the scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle by calling 800-921-BURN. You know CortiSlim people. You run into those CortiSlim show-offs constantly. You hear how great and physically fit they feel and how they're going shopping for new clothes. Well, CortiSlim people have learned that at least part of their weight issues are related to stress and hormones. CortiSlim people don't drive themselves nuts because they've learned the balance of exercise, nutrition, diet, and supplementation. If you're ready, step off the scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle. Call now and get $20 off when you purchase 2 bottles of CortiSlim. $20 off 2 bottles. That's huge. Call 800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN.
Attention, Single Air America listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Air America because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Air America listeners and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you say, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to actually meet the other people who listen to Air America, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. DemocraticMatch.com is completely free for a limited time. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Every day, Americans play a game. The stakes are very high.
Now stepping to the plate, the Smith family going for a home loan. The loan officer's checking their credit report. This one's going to be close.
Wouldn't you like to know what's in your credit report before you apply for credit? Now you can. Log on to freecreditreport.com and find out how to get your credit report instantly and online for free.
It's a home run.
Log on to freecreditreport.com and win the biggest game of your life. freecreditreport.com.
To the discriminating driver, a luxurious driving experience isn't an option as much as a requirement. That's why Goodyear developed the new Assurance, featuring Comfort Tread technology. Not only does this tire offer a distinct upscale appearance, it delivers a smooth, quiet, comfortable ride. Assurance, featuring Comfort Tread technology. It's the ultimate accessory for your luxury vehicle. For complete details and the retailer nearest you, call 1-800-GOODYEAR.
People invest in plant and equipment. That will help those who are the immediate employer, but also those who manufacture the plant, the equipment, or manufacture the or construct the plant will also have employment. And so it's a ripple effect in our economy. And the
I got your ripple effect. Oh my God. We are hurting, okay? It's really slick to make fun of all this. It's weird to get enraged about it. But here are the facts. Just a couple. This society's hurting. 4 years ago, we weren't. We're trying to fight a two-front war that we're going to lose. Both places. We're trying to impose something on two groups of people, Afghans and Iraqis, that don't want what we're trying to impose on them. The economy's going to hell. Our country is run by a crime organization. Now, with any luck, the crime organization will be excised 3 weeks from yesterday. And then we all hold on to our collectively, we hold on to our asses for 2 months. Actually, three. To see if this criminal, corrupt regime will leave office constitutionally or if they will have to be pried out. And if they lose the election and don't vacate John Kerry's house and John Edwards' house, then I have a feeling that there are enough Americans who are going to pry them out. I just have a feeling. And I think most of those Americans are going to be wearing the uniform of the United States military, one or two or three or four branches. I don't think the military leaders of this country, A, want to run the country, or B, want to be misused the way they have been for 4 years, or C, are going to allow what we have spent 230 years and God knows how many dead soldiers, sailors, and Marines to build, to see it go down the toilet because the Bush crime family decides they're not going to abide by the election results. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens in this country over the next 90 days. Laura is calling from New York. Laura, welcome to the program.
It's great to talk to you.
Hey, my pleasure.
I love your show.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm calling because something really struck me tonight. I agree with you that the debate was mostly pretty ho-hum. It was sort of like press candidate and, you know, stump speech comes out.
Yeah.
But
right. Pull the string.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Button yeah. A and, oh, Bush lost, you know, more jobs in 72 years, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It's all true. But the thing that really struck me was Bush's repetition of the words 21st century jobs.
Yeah, I noticed that too. What's that about?
What is he talking about?
Oh, you don't know either.
Is
okay.
he talking about the minimum wage jobs that are proliferating across the country because no one can find work?
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Is he talking about, you know, the jobs that you get when you go to community college as opposed to when you go to Yale? I mean, what is the man talking about? And
Laura, Laura, you're depressing me even further.
I'm sorry.
I hadn't thought about it. You know, I was thinking the same thing. What the hell is this 21st century jobs? Well, I think you just explained it, and it's not a very happy scene.
No, and I mean, especially from a man who, by all intents and purposes, he wants to drag us back to the 19th century. I mean, he doesn't want any civil rights. He doesn't want affirmative action. He doesn't want women to get the vote. You know, I mean, it's all sort of a backwards momentum. He doesn't believe in science, and now he's talking about jobs for the 21st century, which is just ridiculous.
That would include chimney sweeps, scullery maids, people who lamplighters.
Yes.
Since we won't have any electricity anymore, lamplighters, blacksmiths.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
All those kinds of people.
Parlor maids.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, candlestick makers. 21st century jobs. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Hey, well, listen, Laura, thanks for checking in. This has not been a pretty princess day. I, you know, after listening to these guys, you know, I just want to go home and turn back into a frog. You know what I'm saying? Oh, my goodness. Brian is calling from New Jersey. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing great. You know, I'm going to be able to say, Brian, welcome to the program. I'm going to have to put you on hold because we have a break coming up. You don't mind, do you?
No, I don't. I'm just getting sick of looking at Ann Coulter on CNN right now.
Oh, my God. She's on CNN?
Oh, my God. She's talking with Reverend Jesse Jackson, and it's just with the truth. Oh, my God.
Oh, that'll give me something to watch during the news break here. So Ann Coulter, is she dressed in drag again tonight?
Well, she's looking straight black to me. That's all she got on.
Her inner
soul.
By dressed in drag, I mean, you know, she's really a guy. Not that there's anything wrong with that. All right, so, put you on hold, Brian. We'll come back after the break, and the rest of your phone calls. I don't know if we're going to get to this Bill O'Reilly lawsuit today, tonight or not, but there's some really good reading in this thing if you want to check it out. Go to thesmokinggun.com, and it's all there. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Enough is enough. In baseball, it's three strikes and you're out. Representative Tom DeLay just got his fourth. The Republican House Majority Leader DeLay is one of the most powerful men in Congress. Nicknamed the Hammer, he's known for his tough tactics. Now he'll be known for his blatant corruption. Last week, the House Ethics Committee reprimanded DeLay for two ethics violations, adding to two others he'd already racked up. After two earlier violations, the Hammer has now been nailed for strong-arming a Republican member of Congress to side with big drug companies on the recent Medicare bill and threatening a Washington lobbying firm because it hired a Democrat as its chief. That's four, count them, four strikes. But the Republican Party won't even allow an independent counsel to investigate him. Let's send that Congress a clear message. Repeated ethics violations are simply unacceptable. It's time to call DeLay out on strikes. Tell Speaker Denny Hastert that he must demand that DeLay step down as Majority Leader. For more, go to thenation.com on Katrina Vandenhoevel for Air America Radio.
Preposterous! You've heard it takes two to tango? Well, when it comes to building healthy bones, it takes more than just calcium. It also takes phosphorus. In fact, building bones without phosphorus is, well, preposterous! Now there's Posture D, the only leading calcium supplement with calcium plus phosphorus. For millions of women who may be phosphorus deficient, now there's Posture D in the orange box. Because building bones without phosphorus is preposterous!
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
You're listening to 1190 WLIB New York, the flagship station of Air America Radio.
Air America Radio News, I'm Jeff Weiser. President Bush and Senator John Kerry sparred over a wide range of issues in their third and final presidential debate last night. Senator Kerry got the first question and accused the president of pushing allies aside and rushing the nation into war. Kerry said the U.S. is now bearing the extraordinary burden of the ongoing conflict in Iraq. Bush defended his moves and said freedom is on the march in Iraq and Afghanistan. Bush vowed to stay on offense against terrorism. And on fiscal matters, each candidate accused the other of being fiscally irresponsible. Jared Serbu reports.
President Bush wasted no time in painting Senator Kerry as an extreme liberal, saying he voted to raise taxes 98 times.
You know, there's a mainstream in American politics, and you sit right on the far left bank. As a matter of fact, your record is such that Ted Kennedy, your colleague, is the conservative senator from Massachusetts.
But Kerry says he's voted even more times for lower taxes. He charges Bush is playing with the numbers.
Being lectured by the president on fiscal responsibility is a little bit like Tony Soprano talking to me about law and order in this country. this president has taken a $5.6 trillion surplus and turned it into deficits as far as the eye can see.
At the presidential debate in Tempe, Arizona, I'm Jared Servin.
One of the first questions had to do with the lack of a flu vaccine this year. Bush blamed the shortage in part on a fear among American companies about being sued. He said the flu vaccine problem is an example of the need for legal liability reform. Senator Kerry said the flu vaccine flap is an example of what's wrong with the overall U.S. health care system. Hours before the debate, Vice President Dick Cheney was on the campaign trail in Pennsylvania. He told a crowd in Saxonburg, the choice in the election is clear and the stakes are high. Cheney says this election could not come at a more crucial time in history.
We face an enemy every bit as intent on destroying us as were the Axis powers in World War II. This is not an enemy we can reason with or negotiate with or appease. This is, to put it simply, an enemy that we must destroy. And with George Bush as commander-in-chief, that's exactly what we're doing.
Iraqi Prime Minister Iyad Alawi has delivered an ultimatum to militants in Fallujah. He has demanded they hand over foreign terrorists, including Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. If not, he told Iraq's interim national council that, quote, we are ready for major operations in Fallujah. Meantime, a suicide bomber killed two U.S. soldiers in Mosul, and a third soldier died in a bombing in Baghdad. Worries about tight heating oil supplies in the Northeast drove crude oil prices up even higher Wednesday. The price of U.S. crude futures rose more than $1 to $53.64. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
Are you sick and tired of your bathroom scale dictating your mood? If you're down a pound, great day. But watch out if you're up a pound or two or your clothes get a bit tighter. That is not a good day. If this sounds like you, then I urge you to step off the scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle by calling 800-921-BURN. You know CortiSlim people. You run into those CortiSlim show-offs constantly. You hear how great and physically fit they feel and how they're going shopping for new clothes. Well, CortiSlim people have learned that at least part of their weight issues are related to stress and hormones. CortiSlim people don't drive themselves nuts, because they've learned the balance of exercise, nutrition, diet, and supplementation. If you're ready, step off the scale and into the CortiSlim lifestyle.
Call now and get $20 off when you purchase two bottles of CortiSlim. $20 off two bottles. That's huge. Call 800-921-BURN. 800-921-BURN. That's 800-921-BURN.
Whether you're looking for the best flashlights, radios, and antennas, we've got them at Sea Crane Company. Hi, this is Bob, and that's just a sample of some of the great items you'll find in the Sea Crane catalog. We're constantly searching for new, impressive products, and only the best things we find make it into our catalog. Like the best kitchen knives you can get for the money, and the finest set of pruners we've ever seen. The list goes on and on. And oh yeah, we've got the best solar lights, LED lamps, and shortwave radios, rain gauges, telescopes, barometers, pillow speakers.
Bob could go on and on. That's because the Sea Crane catalog is filled with so many incredibly fun and useful things. But take a look for yourself by calling for the free Sea Crane catalog at 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863. Or go to the web at ccradio.com. The Sea Crane Company. Discover something new today.
Sudden ups and downs, breathtaking twists and turns. No, it's not a roller coaster, it's the stock market. But Barron's, America's premier financial weekly, can help you make money whichever way the market moves. Now you can get 13 weeks of Barron's plus the valuable guide to building wealth and 4 weeks of Barron's online, all for only $39. This offer is available to new subscribers in the continental U.S. Call now, 800-858-5800. That's it.
Okay, I'm recording a promo.
Shh. Hi, this is Al Franken. Thursday on the Al Franken Show, Christmas is just around the corner, right after Halloween and Thanksgiving. And Santa Claus himself, Mr. George Soros, will be climbing down our chimney with a sack full of financial sugar plums to promote the cause of truth, justice, and the American way. He's doing his best to make sure that on November 2nd, I'll be saying ho, ho, ho tomorrow on the Al Franken Show.
Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. We will continue the discussion here on the debate, post-debate fall de rol from you and me. All right, you want to do it? Okay. Okay. Brian. We just put you on hold, and see, as promised, we're back. Isn't that wonderful?
That is wonderful.
Yeah. All right. Where were we?
Well, I don't know. Just catching that newscast there. I can't believe the oil wasn't talked about today at all during the debate.
Yeah, environmental issues, the price, the cost of energy coming from Bush's friends in the Middle East. Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's 53 a barrel. I think I heard it on Randy Rose, the highest in history.
Can you believe 53? What was it when? Let's see now.
28, wasn't it?
Well, 4 years ago, I'm trying to date this, when Kathy and I moved back from Chicago to Atlanta, 4 years ago, gas here in Atlanta was 92 cents a gallon.
Wow.
And I thought, what the hell is going on? And because that was probably the cheapest when you factor in inflation that it's ever been. And I think gas, what was it, Kathy? It was down to about $13 a barrel. Now, granted, you can't, that's nonsense. You know, as far as I'm concerned, gas ought to be $5 a gallon. That's what everybody in the rest of the world pays. I don't want to pay it, but there's no way in hell that our engineers and our urban planners and people like that are ever going to let loose of the tube until it becomes so expensive for Americans that we start developing alternative technologies, whether it's hybrid automobiles or fuel cell or whatever it is. And you know, so I'm kind of caught. You know, I'm on a certain income.
The whole problems we're having right now with you know, the oil and us trying to have so much of it because we need so much of it, yeah, is one of the reasons why we're over there in the first place. I mean, if we had a reasonable form of renewable energy and, you know, we had cars and things that worked on something other than oil and fossil fuels,
right,
you know, like the stuff that Kerry talks about, we're trying to, you know, advance renewable technology, then we wouldn't even, you know, have to be in that kind of situation.
I know. It's miserable. But you're right. Missing in action tonight was any discussion of oil prices.
And, I mean, yeah, it's $1.95 a gallon where I'm at, and yeah. I just think if he could have mentioned something about that, might have gotten people. You know, I mean, I'm sure you get the attention of just, you know, when you go up to the pump, but it's, you know, it's something different when you talk about it and ask them why.
Yeah, that's very true. Hey, thanks, Brian. Thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
All right, you have a nice evening. Blair is calling from Berkeley, California. Blair, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm back again.
Yes, you are.
Listen, I really feel for the guy in Portland, your very first caller, whose name,
yeah,
I didn't catch.
Yeah.
And also the guy, I think his name was Dan, about having to sign up for a Pell Grant. My own situation is that I've become disabled from a city job, which I can't talk too much about. It's
right. I understand.
Paperwork. But I made all of, and I looked it up, $17,000 last year,
when
I had a job nearing $40,000. And
hold on just a second. I was talking over you there. You made $17,000 last year, and the year before you were making $40,000?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Close to $40,000.
Yeah, okay.
And my big, huge tax cut there at 6% tax rate was $147.
Mm.
Which people had thrown in my face.
Yeah.
Now, quite frankly, the heck of a lot that does me. My really big point here, and you even said that you went to the bathroom when they were talking about, the question was about strong women, that all three of us seem to have in common strong women.
Oh, yeah, Harry, yeah. I heard that.
Harry went on about his mother and integrity.
Yeah.
And Bush said, my wife tells me to stand up straight, not scowl, and that she talks better than I do. People seem to understand her.
God.
That was what he said tonight. But what Kerry, I really wish Kerry had pointed out, and mostly you three before this have hit on almost every one of my points, is it's as simple as this. A tax break does not help if you do not have a job. I am disabled now. Workers' comp semester of a four-semester program at a state university. I just paid, believe it or not, most of my savings to take one more course.
Please tune back during broadcast hours. 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 Please tune back during broadcast hours.